Welcome to Fired Up, your source for conservative talk. Here we stand in the twilight of educational sanity, where the battleground isn't just about math or science, but whether little Johnny can critically think or is just being indoctrinated into the next societal echo chamber. Inner stage left. Conservatives at school board meetings, not with pitchforks, but with words of compassion and common sense, only to be labeled as attackers of peace, love, and understanding. It's become a spectacle where education issues are debated with the fervor once reserved for the Hatfields and McCoys. Now let's talk about the intellectual fortitude of our youth. Kids today, armed with smartphones but seemingly lacking common sense, are often depicted as less informed than a goldfish with ADD. No, that's not just hyperbole. It's a reflection of an education system where learning to think critically is sometimes swapped for how to navigate through a TikTok soap opera of nonsense. And who better to navigate this educational quagmire than Kamala Harris? Her interview with Bret Baier on Fox News could be titled "The Art of Avoiding the Question," where clarity went to die. Harris, with her chameleonic accents shifting from Mexican lowrider cool to Southern draw faster than you can say, fundamentally transformative, managed to make "What's Your Plan on Education?" sound like an illegal alien explaining he only wants to peacefully turn your apartment complex into a vibrant, culturally enriched gang stronghold. Obama, not one to be left out of the educational commentary, seemed to imply that black men voting for anyone but Kamala might be akin to choosing the wrong flavor of Kool-Aid at a party where only one flavor exists. The monolithic narrative here isn't just about policy, it's about reducing a diverse electorate into a single predictable block, which in and of itself questions the critical thinking we're supposedly fostering. So here we are, in an era where school boards might as well be renamed the Great Debate Society, where critical thinking is sometimes confused with critical race theory, and where our political figures with their varied accents and monolithic voter expectations navigate this mess with all the grace of a cat on ice skates. Is that cat from Springfield? I digress. This isn't just about education. It's about the survival of nuance and the art of not sounding like a walking meme in the age of instant information. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, your source for all things conservative. And we've got another exciting show. I like saying that, exciting show, because we make things fun. And today, we are going to make education fun. Oh my God, how many times did we hear that as a kid and roll our eyes and groan? You know, you had that one teacher, unless she was a pretty hot teacher, like my fifth grade teacher, who I had a big crush on. But I digress again. I'm joined here by G. Mangani and Annette Ross, my regular fellow co-host. And right now we have Rosie Heguerra, and we're going to have Angela Martinez, as she's going to be coming in here shortly. But real quick, Miss Rosie is running for school board. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, Rosie.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. Fired Up. I love it. So great. So my name is Rosie Heguerra, and I am a wife, mother, and a grandmother. I'm not a politician. I went to a school board meeting a few years back, and I was shocked and appalled by the lack of accountability with the school board and the superintendent. And I merely was with a group of family advocates trying to get porn out of the school libraries and trying to get the grades up, to which they refuse. The vote is always 5-0. And I thought, you know what? We're wasting our time here. We're spinning our wheels. We have no real power as community members, constituents, and parents because they don't care and they're not listening to us. They are in the pockets of the teachers' union and totally beholden to the superintendent. which is not how it's supposed to be. And so I decided to run for school board to actually have a say at the table.
So how are you doing in your race, Rosie? I mean, I know you're probably being bombarded by the teachers' unions, but and I'm trying to be real here and transparent. These races are really tough for conservatives here in San Diego the last 10 years. How's it going for you this cycle?
So from the teachers, from the support staff, from the people that are actually supposed to be the security guards at the school boards, they are extremely thankful that I am running, and they completely agree with my stance, and they want to support me. And they're really tired of this administration that has been there a long time, that is always voting to the detriment of students and even staff and family members. So they're, I have overwhelming support actually in the community. It's really great. People are contacting me all the time and letting me know what's happening to their child and their family in the school system. And so it's been pretty good. I am the subject of attacks from the teachers union. They're spending $73,000, which is unheard of, to try to defeat me. They've bought full color mailers, which they're not supposed to do so close to the election. They're breaking a lot of the fair political practice violations. And yeah, the teachers union president actually made a YouTube video about me and tried to get all the teachers to go and walk for the incumbents. And even the city council member went on attack mode against me and said that I was a danger to children. So I made my video in retort to that, and I actually confronted him at this last school board meeting, which was great. And I did a live Instagram while I was doing it. And the first time, I got walked out by three police officers, which was pretty funny. So yeah, I think that they are getting a little nervous, and they should be.
You know, I got to be honest, Rosie, saying a Latina is a bad mother or whatever, that's just unheard of. You know, if anything, a Latina mama will slap us silly in the right way. So, Miss Annette, you know, you're on here every week, but we take you for granted. Tell us a little bit about your race and how you're faring in it.
Well, I have no idea how I'm faring. We have six people running for three spots, and I'm the incumbent, the current president of the school board. I feel like the opposite of what's happening to you, Rosie, is happening to me. We sort of have a very little conservative district, but the demographics of our district have changed a little bit, too. So we've got some people in there now that are a little more, let's say, moderate, maybe some liberal, but mostly just moderate. And then we have like a fringe group, I think, that is trying to make it feel like all of a sudden our school, trying to use fear to say that our school has gone like liberal and woke. And they're using me in that argument to say that I have not like stood up for the children and the things that I believe in strongly enough.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're doing to you what they're doing to Andrew Hayes. You know, just saying you're not conservative enough. You
know?
And here's the terrible thing. The terrible thing is Republicans have historically fought harder against their Republican opponents than they ever do against the Democrats. That's what blows my mind. I get so angry at that. If we fought with the fervor we fight each other, we'd win a lot more of these elections. All right.
No. Wait, I have to say one thing that they did, though, because you'll find it fascinating. One of the guys who's coming at me found a, in 2008, made a donation to Obama. I didn't. I made a donation to the trial lawyers that had my case for, you know, I got hurt, and so I had a medical malpractice case. But he found it, and he put it out there and basically told a bunch of people that I was really a Democrat. It was just been awful for me. It's been some of the meanest, most spirited experience of my adult life, honestly. I've never had an experience like this.
So you're saying that the donation you made to your trial lawyer group went to Obama instead of whatever?
I believe that was the only thing that I could figure out, G. I mean, I did not make any donations to Obama. But in 2008, I had gone to the legislature in Hartford to testify about tort reform, and that was a Democratic issue. And I was involved with those trial lawyers during a long medical malpractice trial that went on for years and years, and they did ask me to make a donation. I believe that's where they put the donation. Honestly, at the time, I was trying to walk again and didn't care. Wasn't thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? Didn't think it would creep up to me in 2024 and in a school board race. But the fact that they would take that, Republicans, and twist that, not the party. The party's endorsed me, so I'm happy with the party. But there is like this fringe group that they're again, like you said, the infighting, William. It's unbelievable. For a principled person like myself, it's like I don't have a very thick skin, so it's hurting right now, for sure.
Oh, yeah, you definitely have to come to that place where you're unoffendable and you just realize that you don't even get involved in those Twitter wars and Facebook wars. I mean, I think that somebody's impersonating me or my social media and actually reaching out to voters and calling them names, and I kind of have to laugh because I'm like, it's so out of character for me to even speak like that. And so, it can get pretty nasty. I just sit back and talk about it.
Well, how do you defend yourself if somebody's impersonating you? What do you do?
You don't go down that rabbit hole because it's endless and it will never end. And it'll just give you a big fat headache. And so it's, the truth eventually will come out and your character will shine through in the end. And really, you don't do this unless you love kids and you love your community. And in the end, the kids are worth it, absolutely worth it. So you just got to keep your eye on that and realize they are our future and it is a war and we need warriors to stand up for them. So
speaking of warriors, let me introduce Angelica Martinez. I just love saying your name, Angelica. I rarely ever talk Spanish.
Hi.
So throwing that out is nice. I heard Angelica speak the other night, and her story moved me because that's one reason I'm so angry is her story epitomizes that. But first of all, Angelica, if you can introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, about the race you're in. And if you don't mind, I'd like for you to take a few minutes to talk to us about your son and what propelled you to get going with this battle.
Okay. And sorry, I get a little sentimental sometimes when I talk about it because I can't believe I'm living through this. So I apologize beforehand. So my name is Angelica Martinez, and I'm running for Sweetwater Union High School District, Trustee Area 2 here in Chula Vista. And I'm an educator. I have 23 years experience working in middle school and high school. I work with special education students. I'm in the classroom every day. And, I'm running for school board because I saw a lot of unethical practices, and they were towards my 14-year-old son. My son has an IEP, and I had noticed that he was failing his classes, his goals weren't being met, and so I questioned the school about it, and instead of working with me, they just started making a lot of excuses. And so then I started going to the school and observing, and I found out that there was, in this math class, there was 37 students, and there were 14 students with IEPs. And there was a lot of, commotion. Kids weren't learning. Kids were talking. The teacher was trying to teach. The kids were, being kids because there was 37 students. And so I addressed that with the principal. And I really never got a response. We started getting retaliated against, especially my son. In September of 2023, he was at a baseball game at Otay Ranch High School. And during warmups, one of the coaches grabbed him from the jersey and shook him around and told him that he couldn't do the Freddie Freeman celebration dance because, they were excited that they were going to play. And he grabbed him from the jersey, and his teammate saw. And when I requested an investigation, they don't have that student as a witness. There's no witness. Well, there's apparently witnesses on the teacher's side, which my son says there was nobody there because they had gotten late. They had gotten there late. And so the only two kids that were practicing were him and his friend. So that was one incident in September that never got resolved. The investigation was done internally by the district, and obviously it was biased. I don't believe they really investigated it correctly. And then in December of 2023, I believe it's December 8th, it was a Friday, and my son got slapped by a teacher in the back, and there was witnesses there, and there's surveillance cameras around in the area. But when I went to the school, I asked him if I could see the surveillance video, and the principal told me no, that I couldn't see it, that they had to call their legal department and get permission to see it. When I know for a fact that parents go down to schools and see surveillance video footage of their kids acting up, but when a teacher acts up, us parents can't see the surveillance video. So that's the difference. It's used against kids, but you can't use it against the teacher. Mm-hmm. So that's a big discrepancy. I've been trying to fight the district. I've gotten FERPA involved, and they haven't been able to get the footage. And that just that brings a lot of questions. Why aren't they allowing me to see this footage? I mean, what am I going to see? Am I going to see the truth?
Angelica, do you have a lawyer helping you?
I've spoken to some lawyers, and unfortunately, because there's no real damage. I mean, thankfully, my son, it was just a bruise. It was just, he was just smacked. He's not missing a limb. You know, there wasn't a lot of trauma involved. So lawyers don't really want this case. And this is the gray area. Districts know that. Districts know they can get away with a certain amount of damage because they know an attorney is not going to waste their time for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 case. They want million-dollar cases. And they know this. They know that typical parents don't have $20,000, $30,000 to give an attorney to fight the district. And they know that. And they have their own attorney. So they're very smart. They know how to protect themselves. And that leaves us parents just
Did you do a public records request of the school for that video footage?
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to do that on your own without a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. I just went to the police station yesterday. And I'm not giving up. And they told me that it was a miscellaneous case, that it wasn't labeled or called, I don't know, whatever's a crime or whatever's supposed to be called, that I had, that it had been labeled miscellaneous. So there wasn't an investigation going on. And I said, no, we need to investigate. This is a teacher. We need a, we need paper trail. You know, who knows if this teacher's done it before? Who knows if he's going to do it again? So let's hold everybody accountable. The district, the teachers, even the police. Let's do the right thing. So yesterday I went ahead and I changed the name of the investigation to, I don't remember what it's called. I don't know what the police called it, but it's a different from miscellaneous. And honestly, I'm just the typical parent. I don't know where to find this stuff, where to get the video. I just figured FERPA because I read into it and it said that this video footage now belongs to my son's educational file. And as a parent, I have that right to see my son's educational file, and they're not allowing me to. So they're breaking a lot of rules.
Just speaking from a school board member's perspective, there's a thing called Public Records Acts Request, PRAR. And you can send that to the superintendent, and if you know who the lawyer is for the district, CC them and formally request that, and they will have to deliver it to
you. They have to respond, yes.
They have to deliver it. They're banking on that. They're not delivering it to you because you haven't filed that. So they can say, oh, well, you requested it, but we don't have to deliver it because you're not doing an official Public Records Acts request.
So even if I ask for an educational file, that's it's different from a public record request?
Yeah, because it might not be in the file. So that's different. And they will avoid putting that kind of stuff in something that's not discoverable by a public records request. So, yeah.
Okay. And Helica, they'll society organizations, they're not good people. They look at it from a legal perspective. So if they don't have to share it because it could hurt them, they won't share it. But that's why there's formal – it's kind of like a criminal. When he goes, I want a lawyer, everything stops and they have to give – allow him to speak with a lawyer. I mean, there's certain rules in place, and that's what you're saying. Maybe G can talk to you once we're done with the show and give you that information. But this spurred you, Angelica, to run. So tell us a little bit about your race. First of all, your son is okay. Is he being treated well now at school? I assume with all this going on, they're a kids club now, right?
You would assume, right?
Yeah, I guess I'm assuming wrong.
Yes, you would assume. But I mean, I've gone quite a few times. I think I've finally put my foot down. But every now and then, I mean, like I said, a few weeks ago, his English teacher got into a debate with my son about border policy. And according to her, her grandfather had came into the country illegally. And so my son happened to say, oh, so he's an illegal. And the teacher said, no, this country shouldn't have borders. This country is for everybody. And my son again argued, no, he's an illegal. And so that became a debate where she ended up calling my son an ignorant because he didn't agree with her point of view. Even though my son Googled it, looked into the computer, you know, researched it and said, look, It's illegal what he did. It didn't change her mind. And that was really hurtful because I don't believe my son was wrong. You know, there are border policies. Why would she refer to my son as an ignorant after all the abuse he's been through? So many teachers that have verbally abused him, because it's not just physical abuse. He's been told your mom has to come and babysit you. The teachers don't like you. The counselors don't like you. He's been bullied throughout his seventh and eighth grade middle school. And now he's in ninth grade and the teachers are continuing. When is it going to stop?
You know, Angelica, that's just it. I think that's why I was telling Rosie, I don't know if we were on camera, Rosie, or we were off camera, that people are tired. You're running in a cycle where the anger is there from people who are seeing this happen. And maybe not even to the – I just saw a video of a father going to a Board of Education meeting with his daughter, angry because a little boy followed the daughter in to watch her tinkle. To watch her tinkle. Not that he had to go, but to watch her tinkle and he could go in there. So people are getting angry because we've gone so far to one side that even moderates who aren't conservative, they're going, wait, this is too much. And I think your tale is one of many out there. And that's sad that I say that. But that said, I hope you can get this resolved, and you got to be a pit bull. You can't give up because they're hoping you give up. They're hoping that and this is where the Latino in me comes out. And you got to take that Latino hardheadedness, that love for your kid. My mom, we go back and forth, but there's one thing I know, she would die for me, even today, as an adult, you know? And that's the love of a mother. And that's any race or any culture. But make sure that love of your son stays strong. But tell us a bit about your race itself.
You know what? Can I just tell you one other thing? I forgot the cherry on the top. After I had the school investigate the second assault. 11 school days later, my son was accused of serious bodily injury towards another classmate. And there was no police report. the child was not even seen by the nurse. I went over to the school and I interviewed some of the friends. They made up a claim that my son seriously injured a child, so they could change him from the school. So they ended up moving him because they got tired of me. And so they ended up changing him to another school under false allegations. Serious bodily injury. That's in his file.
Wow.
11 days. That's not retaliation. 11 school days. And not just that. He became a serial choker. He was choking people. That's what he did. He apparently choked a child to the point where he couldn't breathe. And again, there was a camera there. But he became a career choker because all of a sudden all these kids that didn't like my son started saying that he had choked them. And you know, they had a manifestation of determination. They told me that, you know, that what he did was part of his disability. He was impulsive and he hugged the kid, like he hugged him. And that was just an impulsive reaction from him. And they still ended up moving him to another school. And on top of that, what's weird is then the principal was moved to another school like a few weeks later. So there's a lot there.
It sounds like it's a culture. It's like a bad culture. Big John is coming on because he has a special needs child also. And I asked him while we were all talking, I go, have you ever dealt with this? He goes, for 20 years. So Big John, you want to step in here?
Yeah, it's just so – you know, I went through it, not in California, in New York, but it's the same type of story. My son has been getting IEP since he was 6 up until he was 21. Now he's an adult with autism, so it's, you know, it's ongoing for us. But when he was in school, the mistake people make is that school boards or school districts are somehow in the business of educating your child or doing what's best for them, which is not the case, at least not in New York legally, right? Legally, all they have to do is provide the least restrictive environment for your child, right? So, like in the case of my son, every year we get an IEP. Every year they would violate the IEP. And I did not even bother with public schools. I was sending my son to private schools, but the IEP was in place to make sure I got reimbursed by the state. At one point, they owed me over $1 million. And my lawyer would take them to court every year. And every year they'd say, come back again next year. Every year we lose this judgment, we're just going to roll it into next year. We don't care. We can wait. We've got an army of lawyers. How long can your client afford to keep paying you? They were very open about it. They just didn't care. So the thing you have to do is just keep at it if you can. Eventually, the State Supreme Court of New York ruled in my favor. And they ruled in my favor on procedure for one reason. When the state provided their argument, they had the name of a completely different student in the report.
Oh, I have that too.
Right? So the judge just read that report and said, who is Miguel Hernandez?
We're talking about Mr. Dirdopoulos.
Yeah, right? It's Mr. Dirdopoulos here. And that was an ongoing issue. They don't care. It's not people to them. It's not children to them. It's just chess pieces. It's pieces on the plus and minus side of a ledger. That's all it is. So you as a parent, unfortunately, it's horrible to have to say this. You have to be your child's best advocate. And it's not even any individual school board member or any individual school board. It's a zero-sum game. There's only a certain amount of dollars, a certain amount of attention that can go around. So I tell any parent in New York, you have to be your child's advocate, and you have to know exactly what's going on. There's no such thing as you can't look at the tapes. There's no such thing as you can't visit your son in the classroom. None of that. I'm fortunate. I'm 6'3". In my heyday, I was a collegiate wrestler. So if they tried keeping me out of those classrooms, it wasn't going to work. And they knew better, right? So I got lucky. I would get to the door and they say, well, you can't observe. And I would say, fine, move me, call the security guard. They would never do that. But I could see where they intimidate people. I've been witness to it. You know, parents who couldn't speak English, for example.
You know, I had
always targeted, right? They would be the last ones on the list. And, you know, you walk through these parents at every IEP, every hearing, and your heart would break for them because you knew they didn't know enough to have a lawyer. They couldn't speak English well enough to speak on their own behalf. My whole friend was just to what you're going through is like constantly getting people on the record, getting them to say things that they know they're going to get caught on, right? So, like I said, in my case, I challenged the head of the school district, the special district 88 in New York. I said, I will give in to all your demands if you could just tell me what my son's name is.
Oh, wow.
We've been here for 2 hours. If you could tell me what my son's name is, he has a very unique, very Greek name. If you could tell me what his name is without looking at your paperwork, I will concede every point you've ever made. And the head of the school district looked at me and said, I'm not here to play games, and walked out of the hearing. At which point the school district lawyer said, send me whatever you want. We'll approve it tomorrow morning. Because they knew they had a lawsuit on their hands, right? So they said, we'll approve whatever you ask for. So I'm trying to say they say politics is dirty. School boards are even dirtier. Trying to get what your child needs is the dirtiest game on this planet. My advice for everybody is if you could afford to send your kids to a private school, send them to a private school. At least you have some more control there. But if they have to go to a private school, you have to be worse than a shark, worse than a lion, more aggressive than anything you could think of. And never let anyone tell you that you don't have the right to monitor your child's education, to get them what they deserve. That IEP should become your Bible. For those that don't know, an IEP is an individualized education plan, right? Mm-hmm. And that's for kids. Typically, it's used for kids with special needs. Sometimes it's used for kids that are having a learning difficulty or whatever. Mm-hmm. But basically, the state is required to follow that IEP. So if that IEP requires a shadow for your child, if that IEP requires a special classroom, or accommodations of any sort, they're supposed to follow it, and at their expense too, right? That's the whole point. But that's also why school boards try not to have those things, right? Because if they say, I got to give Angelica's kid, you know, it's going to cost the school board $100,000 to fulfill this kid's IEP, that means that $100,000 has to come from some other group of children, right? It's a zero-sum game. They can't automatically make more money or create more services. So I hear your pain, and when William told me, would you like to come on and, like, tell us what you did? This was a battle for me for 20 years. At one point, I had mortgaged my home 3 times because they would just not pay me settlement. I had a 7-figure settlement from the state of New York that they refused to pay. And finally, 1 year before his education was to run out, at 20 years old, they decided to finally pay me. So for 7 years, I was a Wall Street banker, and I was living day to day because, like, all our resources were going for my son's education. And despite having these settlements, these court-ordered settlements, you know, people shake their head. Supreme Court said they have to pay you, and they just ignored the Supreme Court of the state of New York for 3 years. Just, we don't care. We'll let it roll up. We don't care. Yeah. So you got to fight is what I'm saying. Listen, more power to you, strength to you. Never lose your faith. Never lose your determination. William will tell you, to me, there's nothing more important than my son in this world. So to me, it was never a question of school boards, money, or anybody else stopping me. I would advise the same to you, and you're doing something about it. You're running for office. So good for you. Good luck for everything that you're attempting to do. And hopefully you'll get some satisfaction for both your child and yourself. So thank you. That's all I want to say.
I got to say, though, Big John just called Gene and Annette dirty, and he's going to call Angelica and Rosie dirty, too, if you get elected to the board. Just be aware of that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I did say that, but I did preface it that typically it's not people, right? Because even the people who are on these positions, they're given a ledger. This is all you have to spend, and you have to take this lump sum, typically speaking, and everything has to be from that. You can't – And also, if you're the first in line, your IEP is going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be the skimpiest because they don't know what they've got coming up next in all those hearings, right? So if there's 20 hearings, the person who comes in for hearing number one always gets shortchanged. It's very similar to, what is it, scoring in gymnastics in the Olympics. The first person who comes in can never get a perfect score because then everybody else has to be compared to them, right? So it's sort of the same thing with these IEPs. If you're the first one in there to get your IEP, you're going to get the lowest level of support. Because then every other IP has to be measured against that one, right? So if they have X number, the first one in is always going to get the short end of the stick. So you always want to have a late IP later in the day, later in the week. You know, these are things I learned over, like, essentially almost 20 years of having to go in year after year for these things. And, you know, it's very strenuous. So, like I said, like, good luck. God bless you in all your attempts for that and for the folks running for the school boards. You know, there is humanity to be brought to those positions, which I'm sure all of you do. Like, I mean, you know, it's not ever the person per se, but it's the system. The system is rotten to its core. So,
yes. And I would say it's not even just a special needs issue. Just as a parent and community member sitting in on these meetings, we have parent after parent coming before the Oceanside School Board talking about, I mean, one little boy, he was 11 years old, and he was half Arabic and half Mexican, and he was up there crying, and he said, you know, Dr. Vitale, you know, you talk so much about equity and protecting, you know, minorities. How come you didn't protect me? And this kid got beaten up and sent to the emergency room 3 times because he was bullied so bad. He had broken ribs. His mother was going through chemotherapy at the time. She got up there and she cried, and not once did they bat an eye, apologize, take any accountability, zero. So I think that's what they do, is they don't want to accept any liability, and so they try to sweep it under the rug, and then the parent goes away, and they think, oh, great, we're not getting sued, they're not following through, and so we got away with it. Another parent that came through was, this is elementary school, the mother and the father, they come up to the podium, and they say that there was a boy that was sexually harassing their daughter. We're talking elementary school. The boy says, I want you to have sex with me. And she's like, leave me alone. And he basically threatened her and said, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to kill you. He cornered her in the bathroom. He cornered her brother in the bathroom. They harassed these two kids so much. And the parents, they complained. This is a school on base. They complained to the principal. The principal gaslit the parents. And so did the assistant principal. And they bullied them, and at the last day of school, they rescinded the father's volunteer privileges. And it was so bad that they literally had to pull their children out of the school district. So it's a commonality, this whole bullying, intimidation of children on children, and then with the principal and the school board and superintendent against the parents that try to expose this stuff. And so, and they weaponized the lawyers that are our tax dollars paid for against us as well. And so I would encourage you, Angelica, like Big John says, fight for your child, pull your child out of public school. You can homeschool them. You can charter school them. There are so many different options available to you. But the most important thing is that your child is safe and mentally, emotionally safe, because this is damaging. All of that bullying has real consequences, real physical and mental consequences. And then I would say, you know, follow through with organizations like Protect Our Kids. They will fight for you. You can go online and they'll do an intake form. They have lawyers and they specialize in this sort of thing. I can put you in touch with Aaron Friday, the lawyer that started the Protect Our Kids petition. But yeah, you do have to play the long game like John did, and it might take years, but it's absolutely worth it, because you send a message, you set precedents, and you let them know that this is unacceptable and they are accountable for protecting all kids.
I have something to say about that. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to take my child out of his homeschool? Why do I have to make the change? I don't have to do anything. These people need to do their job. I'm not going to take, my son does not want to go to another school. And I've already told him, you need to go to the school. All his friends are there. His friends from kindergarten. Now, because these people decide to not do their job correctly, mm-hmm. I'm the one that has to move my child out of his school. I have to drive another direction while I have to take my other two kids here to their home school. So it becomes my problem.
Right, and Angelica, that just means you got to fight harder. And it's just going to be that much harder. And I'll make this one comment. It's not just the bullying, the physical, the child is affected too. My mom spoke the worst broken English. And when I would see the American teachers talk down to her, treat her as a child, I would get sad and depressed because that's my mom. That's my world as a little child. So it's not only your children seeing you guys fight this, seeing how they treat you, that's also affects. So it affects everything. You just got to stay strong. So before we forget, Angelica, and forgive me, I don't mean to get back to business, but tell us about your race and why and how people can where they can find you. And we'll do this again before we let you ladies go. So tell us a little bit about your race.
So I am here in Chula Vista, and I am running because I want integrity, equality, accountability. I believe that, I have 23 years in education, and so I'm a good candidate because I've seen a lot of unethical things going on in the schools. And then I work at a school, and my school follows the protocol. We follow policies. I've seen where teachers have also been accused of assaulting children right away. They're put on administrative leave. So I know what schools should be doing. And I could see that a lot of these schools are not doing it. So I want to be on the board so I can help parents like me. I want there to be transparency. We need to have transparency with parents.
Be that school board member that John did not have in his 20 years fighting this. The ones you want to be the compassionate person up there that understands. What's actually happening. You know, Annette's like that too. I think that's what I love about Annette. And when she gets frustrated, that's what I see in her. It's like, it's about the kids, you know, and yet politics, power is everywhere. Whether it's a small five-man office or a school board, people in power, they forget why they're there. And there's reasons that there are things that school boards are just no longer doing. And I want to talk about that. You know, and I guess we should start. Let's use that as a segue to start in the sense of part of the issues I see in my research kind of backed up was the curriculum. You know, we'll start with Annette. The curriculum. How do you think you're running for office? Seems like, and I have nothing against LGBTQ. I have nothing against any of this stuff, but it seems they're putting that critical race theory and non-STEM issues, putting STEM issues behind. Oh, what does STEM stand for? Science, STEM. Help me out, somebody.
Science, technology,
engineering, and mathematics. There we go.
What do you think about STEM?
Yeah, so, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Annette?
Which part? Critical race theory, STEM?
The fact they're putting those things ahead of STEM, ahead of the actual teaching, the actual education to smarten our kids up and prepare them for the world and the workforce.
I think the real problem with the California public schools is that education is the thing we talk about the least. We don't even talk about the curriculums, whether or not they're rigorous. I mean, sometimes we teach to the test. We've got, I think we have some antiquated curriculums. That is the biggest problem. That is the thing. I was just with the school board today, and that's what we were talking about. We were actually discussing curriculum. And I said, this is so nice to talk to you. So we're not talking about politics. We're talking about actually, are our children learning? What are they learning? And she was saying a lot of the ELA that is being taught doesn't have a grammar component, the English language arts, and how important grammar is, and how the grammar scores are, you know, so the punctuation and, you know, the capitalization and putting together a good sentence, and those grammar pieces aren't being taught anymore. So I said, you know what? I actually don't know for our middle school and our ELA how much grammar we have incorporated into that curriculum piece. So we were actually having a really robust conversation about curriculum, which happens so infrequently. Her opinion was, and G, you might disagree with me, that we're focusing too much on that. No, on the engineering and the technology. She thinks we've gone too far in that way. But here's the thing.
Wow.
That's the conversation to have, though. Have we or have we not? It's really, it gets tiring talking about so many of the other things, like the political things that I think have a place and are problematic at times, but we get away from the fact that should we be talking about the STEM versus our other pieces of our curriculum? How are the children learning? We're having this conversation right now about vertical learning. We have a lot of conversations about the best way to learn math. We have a lot of conversations about whether or not we should have honors math. And we then did a thing where some people are upset about we made our honors math sort of like in name only. Supposedly now all the kids are sort of like honor students, but are they really? No, see, I mean, this was the right, gee, I don't know. This is the conversation. And it's the conversation, William, no, they're really, really important conversations. And we're really
not. I'm not groaning at you. I'm just groaning at the whole situation that, I'm
old. You don't like honors? You don't like honors?
No, I'm like, life is not fair. If a kid is smart, he achieves greatness with his studies, he should be rewarded. I was a reader. So that's about the only awards that I ever got were for how many books I could read and understand. When it came to the math and science, I was dead last, you know. But it's like I felt great. It made me want to read more. So so this, it's kind of like I grew when my era as a teenager started to end, the era of participation won you a trophy started to enter. And that's the worst thing you can have. So that's what I was groaning at. But go ahead.
No, we had a very, very high end math, right, G? We had a very, very high end math. And then we wanted to get more kids on an honors pathway. I think what ended up happening, not without good intentions, was it sounds like what happened is it all sort of got watered down. And so, do you think I'm wrong? You tell me what you think. We're on the same board.
No, I think a lot of our students thought math was too easy, and so they wanted more of a challenge. And we were losing a lot of our kids to the private schools around us because they did differentiate. If you're a sixth grader and you're operating at an eighth grade level for math, they would just move you up there, whereas we just said, okay, well, sorry, you have – sixth grade math, and we might bump you up to the next grade, and that's it. But back to the other question that you had in terms of the curriculum, we need to focus on the core education, right? And that's what our students are tested on. That's what how our schools are ranked based on how they do on those tests. But we do expect kids to have a well-rounded education, right? It's not just all about English and math and reading and you barely get tested in science. But okay, you got those four. Okay, well, what else does your kid do? That's what colleges are looking at. So we have sports, but then they throw in these pet issues, right? Sacramento says, well, no, now we got to teach you, race relations and LGBTQ and all this stuff to a sixth grader. Why not teach, like what we do, one of our teachers, she did something amazing. Our third graders learn how to hold stocks in the stock market. Look up a ticker symbol, buy the stock, and see how it does after a couple weeks. I mean, that's a real life education, right? And you're never going to get tested on it. And then we do have a mock stock market in the middle school as well. But we need more of that, like real life training, right? If you're out in the farm and Papa John, not Big John, but Papa John has 15 kids, he's not going to sit there and teach them about race relations. He's going to teach them how to till the soil so that you can make your own living. When you grow up,
you can have food.
So for Rosie and Angelica, Angelica, you're in Chula Vista. Rosie, you're in Oceanside. These are working class districts. Both parents work, a lot of middle income, a lot of lower income. What G said about the stock market, that's great. But at those districts, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was a teacher's aide in National City, it was like just getting them to learn basic math and English and your basic skills to me wasn't even being done. So when I look at the curriculum, I'm like, let's teach them those basics, you know, and maybe as they get a little higher up, they can get into the stock market. But it's like sixth grade, seventh grade, learning all these things that maybe when you're 18, if you want to learn more about them, you can in college. But I am more for the math, arithmetic, reading, and all that, especially with so many Latino kids who come from homes like I did, where we spoke both Spanish and English, where I had to go to summer school because my English was worse than my Spanish. We'll start with you, Angelica. What are your thoughts on curriculum in terms of when people ask you about curriculum as a candidate, what do you tell them? And then we'll go to Rosie.
I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with the curriculum at my school. Okay, we're talking at my school. I don't really see topics that we're not supposed to be talking about. And if it's brought up by a student, you know, it's between them. But I feel like in math and English, I feel that teachers need to modify the work if the students aren't learning. The teachers need to modify and engage with the students. They need to just know what level they're at and then go from there, because each student learns at a different level and they learn differently. So teachers nowadays have to teach their students in various ways so all our kids could learn. And that's where I come in. You know, I start helping students that didn't understand how to do the work. And then, so we do group lessons, and I think we just have to cater more to our students, with the curriculum, more in math and English and science.
That makes sense. And for the record, for the audience out there, Sweetwater, where Angelica Terrell Davis graduated from there, as did some other NFL players. Just to let you know, it's a semi-famous school district there for some of the athletes. Not that that matters to you, Angelica, but sports is my background. Ms. Rosie, what about when you're asked about the curriculum, what's your response to your constituents? And ladies, this is a great opportunity, some of these questions, for you to get your message out there. So you just want to make sure you hit on that. You too, Annette. Go ahead, Miss Rosie.
Our grades are in the 30s and 40s in reading, writing, math, and science. Super low, and that's pretty evident because when we actually go through the drive-through for fast food, the teenagers can't even make proper change. And so it's pretty crazy. So the basics are lacking despite millions being thrown at the kids and the student learning. So there is some disconnect there between the learning and the grades, where all the money is going. A lot of it's going to the Department of DEI, to the administration, despite poor performance. So, but like G said, I would love to bring back the Constitution, woodshop, home economics, financial literacy, the stock market, all of these real life skills that kids can graduate and be ready for the workforce. And I don't see that they're learning this stuff. They're learning all of these controversial things and these political things. And it's very, very concerning to me, because not every kid is going to go into a college. And if they can't read and write, I mean, that's a perfect pipeline to prison there. Mm-hmm. And so our schools need serious help. They really do.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I grew up in – I was not poor. I was middle class. My parents came from dirt poor. You know, I don't have a sob story. I came up this or that. My parents had the sob story, and they did. They lived the American dream, so I wouldn't have to suffer. But I saw some of these same issues of education. I saw in terms of my parents had no clue about education. They were, my mom was a factory worker, and my dad was in the special forces community. You know, he was a soldier. You know, so when I hear your tales of that, and then I look at, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm an American first. But the Latino in me comes out, the minority in me comes out, because I'm like, you know, they're being left behind. And a lot of it's because of a lack of language. Again, parents working, as the example she gave was great. It was the farmer example, but the focus at home isn't necessarily what the focus at school is. That's why I said last podcast, school and parenting is kind of like merge. They need to work together. And right. That is depressing. Now, you were talking about some of the political type stuff that they're teaching. One of the things that has become a big lightning rod are books. you know, and a lot of people across the nation are running for school board because they don't like the books that are being used that deal with race, that deal with sexuality, that deal with gender identity. As G said, in sixth grade, being taught about critical race theory. G was being polite. In sixth, in grade school now, they're being taught about sex. You know, and not all good things. So, Rosie, we'll start with you. And what are your thoughts on these book bans, the censorship? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, school boards don't have the power to book bans. I wish that they did. They can censor books, but I agree that these graphic books, which I've read many of them, I've seen many of them, they're highly inappropriate. I mean, some of the content are fathers raping their daughters, teaching kids how to get on gay dating apps. They're encouraging highly sexualized, dangerous behaviors. And I have to ask myself, what does this have to do with academics? And it doesn't have anything to do with academics. And so, yeah, I think that if there's a warning label on the book that says, under 18 shouldn't be viewing these books. I don't think they have a place in the public school library. Now, if the parent wants to buy them off of Amazon, then so be it, or check it out at the local library, fine. But I don't think our tax dollars should be spent on this smut.
I no argument here. Miss Annette, there was a time when Huckleberry Finn and similar books like that were standard bearers for us growing up, and then they removed them because of a few words. But then they're allowing these other types of books. As a candidate, what are your thoughts on these book bans, these censorships of books that they're now allowing in some of these districts?
I mean, I've got to ask you, William, I wonder sometimes what's real and what's not real. I haven't seen the same thing that Rosie's talking about in our district, although I do get upset about Huckleberry Finn, because I think Mark Twain is one of the most important writers of the canon in the United States, of the Western canon. And so that's depressing. I have not seen that sort of content at our school, in our district. And what we've done is we're letting the parents, which I think that parental rights, it speaks to your point about parental rights, see what the subject matter of the books we're going to have the children read are. And if they don't like it, they get to make another choice. And I think that that's fair. I think they should know what the content of the book is. And if they're not comfortable with it, they think child's not ready for it, they don't want to have that conversation with their child, there are other choices out there, other selections, and you can make that other choice. There's something happening right now in our sixth grade class, and it's like they're reading about activism. Now, I'm not sure, like, to what degree it's activism. It's like you could write about Greta Thunberg. She's an activist, right? So it's like, kids learning about activism and they're at the ripe old age of 11, 12. I'm not sure exactly what that's all about. However, some of the parents not excited about it, and that we said at our school, you know what? Then you can make a different choice. That's probably about as good as you're going to get. And can I just say to something that I think maybe you said it, Angelica, or you did, Rosie, I'm sorry if I forgot who said it. What are we going to do about it? We can't get rid of a bad teacher. That is part of our problem. Part of our problem is a bad teacher can stay forever, and there's not really a lot we can do about it. So if our kids aren't learning, I mean, they're in the classroom with teachers, so teachers should be, like, doing their job, sort of what, to your point, Angelica, and how do you say your name?
You can say Angelica. Angelica.
But yeah. What bothered me the most about what you said is I don't also think I've ever experienced a situation or heard about a situation where a teacher was abusing a child. That was very upsetting to me. So, like, is that happening for other children? Is that happening because your child's very vulnerable? But that makes me just think, like, teachers, we definitely have some not great teachers in our district, for sure. And they get to stay around forever, because there's just not a darn thing we can really do about it. Unless they do something really egregious and really reprehensible, we just are stuck with complacency.
Right. Annette, New York City, they call them rubber rooms. And they have thousands of teachers who can't teach, but they can't be fired. So every day they go to these rubber rooms, which is a classroom, and they're there from 9 to 5. And it's for rape, for assault, these are not good people. But because of the strength and the power of the teachers unions, they can't be fired. So this is happening out there. Again, remember what I told you guys many months ago. The Rancho Santa Fe school board is a pretty strong school board, and you have good parents who are working there. And a lot of other districts, they don't have that. And that's just a simple, ugly truth. Mm-hmm. And then what happens, the unions install their people, and it becomes politicized. So having a strong school board, and have, more importantly, having a strong community of parents is extremely important. Angelica, so when people ask you about the book ban, censorship, what's your stance on that?
Well, as a parent, I mean, I don't want my child reading anything that's inappropriate. One of my children...
Oops.
His middle school teacher actually sent a permission slip, which I thought, oh, well, this is cool. A teacher sent out a permission slip to ask what kind of books my child could read. And I thought, okay, well, books his age, I put, nothing that's over 12 years old. And, I mean, my child is good. He knows what to read and what not to read. But, I hope the teacher got it 12 years old. You know, and I know there's a lot of books out there that are inappropriate. And I was actually reading a list of books that are in question. And I thought they were disgusting. I mean, teaching children how to have sex, homosexual sex and, you know, just different types of sex. I just thought that's really sad that our children are learning this at school if those books are available to them. I don't know if those books are available at my son's district. I'm hoping they're not, but I think this is when parents need to get involved and mm-hmm. just start going to the district meetings and finding out what, you know, if there are these books, we don't want them there. And as a parent.
Mm-hmm. That's a great segue into parental rights and transparency. Mm-hmm. Transparency in curriculum choices, the ability to opt out. You kind of touched on that. So could you want to add on to that in terms of as a candidate running in your stance in transparency and curriculum? The ability to opt out, and then we'll go to Rosie, and then we'll go to Annette.
I think that this teacher did a good job by sending a permission slip. I think that teachers should do that. And if there are books that are inappropriate for students, I think that the principal should let everybody know that these books are available and they're questionable. I think we should know that. That's transparency.
Right, right. No, I agree. Miss Rosie, what's happening over there in Oceanside when you're asked that question on transparency, parental rights, and the ability to opt out? Where does the current school board stand, or what's your stance?
Oh, boy. So... there isn't any transparency in our school district. They used to have KOCT cameras televising live. They took cameras out of the school board meetings. They moved the meetings from 6 p.m. to 5 p.m. And they really limit our speaking to 3 minutes on all the agendized items. So there is and they use Lawfare. They send letters from their lawyers to us to try to shut us down and shut us up. So there is a concerted effort to not be transparent, not to be accountable. For a very long time, they would not give us the book list, even though we asked for a public records request for the book list. So we finally got our hands on it, and we're shocked to see how many divisive CRT books, racial books, inappropriate sexual books were on this list. And it's funny because they kept denying that these books were in the school system, libraries in school. And then they had the LGBT crowd that they riled up against us. They said, we're book banners, we're homophobic, we're transphobic, we're haters. So they all came out with their flags and everything. And the interesting thing was the high schoolers came out with the books in their hands that they said were not in the libraries. And they said, we want these books. Don't take these books. But it was all planned and set up by the LGBT director. And so, that's initially what started me on this whole journey was they still don't. Those books are still in the libraries, and they will not remove them. And they make it very, very hard to remove one book. You have to fill out, like, 4 pages, literally. Like, fill out the paragraph, why you don't like that paragraph, and it, I mean, I'm still waiting for them to pull out the books that I wrote reports on.
And right, right.
It's pretty crazy in our district. They definitely do have an agenda, and they are working in concerted effort together to sexualize our kids and indoctrinate them, unfortunately. And that's precisely why I am running, because the five board members are very much puppets of the superintendent and very much in the hands of the teachers union. And they're all working together because they give the teachers and the administrators all the raises. And so, like, the incumbent that I'm running against, he's been there for 15 years and he's been in city government for 25 years. And he's the one that has voted to close down four schools, take all the buses away and give all the raises despite our kids failing in every critical subject. So, yeah, it's just a big mess.
You know, Rosie, you're not over when I got involved in 2015. Mm-hmm. Your story, I've been hearing that same story out of Oceanside. I forget her name, Margaret or Martha. There's a very powerful, she may have finally got too old to keep running, but she was a very powerful force there for many, many years. She served as mayor not too long ago. I just can't remember her name, but she wasn't a great person, you know. She briefly ran for board of supervisors. That's how I met her, because I was putting on a debate, and then she kind of backed out at the end. But that's for the record, at least for myself, if somebody wants to read books on sexuality and all that, I'm for it when you're 18, you know, and you can make your own decision. But when you're in school, learn about, I mean, once you get to junior high and high school, okay, there's human sexuality and things like that. But it seems like they are politicizing the school systems to the detriment of teaching. Now, Miss Annette, I've been watching your body language there. You seem stunned to hear a lot of this stuff. So before you give me your take on me asking you about, you look a bit stunned. What's your take in terms of your stance on the transparency, parents having curriculum choices, and the ability to opt out? Where do you stand on issues like that?
100% the parents should be able to opt out. And as I said, in our school, make a different choice. There's actually, and I was struggling to remember the name of it because I talked to our superintendent about it. There's like a book rating, like website that gives you these book ratings and lets you know like the content and the subjects in these books, especially for people that are really sensitive and don't want all that exposure for their kids. And basically that gives parents a way to say, okay, this is something I'm comfortable with or not. And I'm struggling right now. It's like looking at my desk, like I can't find that piece of paper that I wrote it down on. But
is that the one run by Kirk Cameron?
I think so. Kim told me about it. She's like, that's what we're going to use. And we'll tell the parents, hey, take a look at this website. Take a look at the content of this book and decide, is that something that you are okay with? Or if not, go ahead and make a different choice. That's transparency. Listen, which battle do we fight here? Because we're battling the state, right? We're not just battling the public schools.
No. You are battling the teachers' unions. That's who you're really battling.
But the union is run by the state. The teachers, I don't think, are trying to push an agenda. Do you really think so? The union that they all pay.
And here's why I think so. I'll tell you why I think so, Annette. Here's some pushback. In this language arts, 47% of students, 53% of students did not meet the English reading standards. 64% did not meet the mathematics standards. 44% in 11th graders, when they first start taking these tests before they graduate, did not meet the English language standards. So, yes, I am one of these. I am not a fan of the teachers. Everybody talks about, it's not the teachers. It's the teachers who vote in leadership. It's the teachers who are promoting which books they want to teach. It's the teachers who don't have respect for the kids who grab and mistreat them. Now, everybody tells me, William, those are just in the minority. I get it. But there are times when the minority rises to control everything. And I look at results. I am a results-oriented guy. And that those stats are staggering because what we're doing is I think it was Rosie who said it. We are creating the recipe to just fill our prisons and not our workforce. So, yes, I do believe not all teachers are bad. Mrs. Onovin, my fourth-grade teacher, or third-grade, first-grade teacher, we wrote down everything we ate for that whole week. She's American Anglo woman. I was Panamanian, first grade. I'm writing down rice and beans. Every day, 5 days, rice and beans. And it was fish, meat, but it was rice. And she was stunned. She thought that, she thought there was something wrong with it. And my mom, with her broken English, she wisened up real quick. So she brought my oldest sister, who kind of got in Miss Onovin's face and said, this is how we Panamanians eat, you know. And instead of being defiant, instead of thinking she knew better, I did not know. I understand now. And she became my greatest advocate in making sure I learned, I taught, I read, I brushed my teeth. You know, when you're at that age, you take those little, you know, little kids. But I mean, she was there for me. So there are good teachers. But I look at these test results and I'm like, no, something's broken. Yeah. And in the military, whoever's in charge is ultimately held responsible. And in that classroom, it's the teacher who's in charge. And I worked for a good teacher, and she was overwhelmed because she had 40 students in there. A third of them barely spoke English. We're holding the other ones back because, you know, I spoke Spanish. So I do admit, we'll concede, they're not, there are good teachers out there. But yeah, these test results, something's broken, and I put the onus on the teachers because they need to stand up for their, against their unions. But instead of standing up for the unions for the kids, like they say they do, they'll only stand up and go on strike for a pay raise.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree. But you're saying two different things, William. You're saying, one, our teachers are not educating our children. And two, you're saying not only that, they're actually pushing an agenda. You believe both those
things? Yes, I am saying that. That's correct.
You know what? I have to agree to an extent. There are some that are graduating from very far left-leaning liberal schools. I mean, Charlie Kirk wrote a whole book, you know, College is a Scam. And I do agree, when they are indoctrinating children to hate, and students over 18 to hate their country, to judge by people's color of their skin, and they're not learning anything of value for the workforce, we're in trouble. I mean, I personally work with about 7 activists that are conservative, they're patriots, they love the country, they're holding our civic leaders accountable, and they send their kids to UC Berkeley, UC San Francisco, and their kids come back and they're like, I hate you, F you, and they're left with this big college bill, and their kids really hate them. And so I've really changed my mind about college, just seeing the experience of my friends and their brokenheartedness. But getting back to what you're saying about the teachers, so they are producing these teachers that are very wonky in the brain. They're not critical thinkers. They've been brainwashed, and they're coming into our system with these ideologies. You know, they're hitting the elementary, middle school, and high schoolers. I went to the Encinita School Board with this whole controversy of My Shadow is Pink, where a father's fifth grade student went into his classroom and the teacher read the gender book, My Shadow is Pink. Okay, so normally every week she sends out a newsletter telling the parents what's going on, what books they've read. She went silent that week, right? So then she didn't stop there. She took her entire fifth grade class to the kindergarten class, where they had been mentoring. They had a little buddy system. She forced all of them to see the video together of the same book, My Shadow is Pink. She took it a step further. She had them pair up and take chalk, sidewalk chalk, and write a shadow. What color would you like your shadow to be? So this fifth grade boy went home and told his dad, I did not feel good about this lesson and being forced to choose a shadow color and then teach our little kindergarten buddies to do the same. So anyhow, my husband and I got wind of it. We showed up at 5 o'clock to a 6 o'clock school board meeting, and it was packed. I mean, we're talking color coordinated shirts for the teachers, for the union members, no place to sit. There was a line all the way to the sidewalk. The news media was there. The speaker cards were getting filled up. And all of these teachers and union members were for it. the council member, Eric Joyce from Oceanside, he's one of the teachers at the Encinitas Elementary School. He was gaslighting the parents that showed up and the students, and they in fact organized a pink out day in defiance to the parents holding the teacher accountable. So I thought, man, I thought my school board was on steroids with this whole indoctrination, sexualization thing. I thought, wow, I was wrong. Encinitas is on steroids. And now they're getting sued over this whole thing. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. In fact, I had friends in the back that were in their 70s. And they came to speak out against this book and against this teacher. And the women, the mothers, were going after my friends, calling them names. Get the F out of here. You don't even have a child in this school district. I thought they were going to jump them. I thought I was literally going to physically have to defend my 70-year-old friends. So it is definitely happening in schools here in San Diego County. And there are teachers that definitely, and school board members, and teachers unions that definitely have a hand in all of this. It's happening.
I can't hear you, William. You're William.
Okay, we can't hear you, William.
No, I saw it. I was looking for the video, and I had to listen to the sound, so I put myself on mute. Okay. And then I will concede this. I don't know what percentage of good versus bad teachers there are. I just looked at the results. But as we were talking about last week about FEMA and how it starts with just the talk and the people in the system, teaching is no different. And listen to this. Can you guys hear that?
No.
Okay. Oh, I guess it'd help if I put the volume on, huh?
Yeah. I see teaching as a very political act. When we are engaging with our students, whether it's on social justice issues or multicultural issues or culturally relevant teaching, I see that as foundational to all learning. I see.
And that's what I'm seeing more and more. And this is why I think a strong school board is so important in the fight to teachers unions, because we don't care about teaching our kids anymore. We care more about politicizing and indoctrinating our kids. It breaks my heart when I'm talking to somebody, I'm like, oh my God, this guy doesn't have the ability to think for themselves. They're looking for me to tell them how to think and what to say. And I'm talking about people who are aligned with me, you know, who may be younger. It's like, I want people to ask why. I'm a why guy. And a corporate VP at EchoStar, which is a direct dish or something like that now, he was telling me, William, you'd never survive in the corporate world. You're a why guy. He goes, I get you're a why guy because you want to learn, but nobody likes a why guy, period. You know, because if you're the right why guy, then they feel threatened. You're going to take their job, or you're the other why guy just trying to be a pain in the butt. You know, I love why people because they're learning and I can teach them. And if I fall off the face of the earth, there's somebody who's going to replace me. And that just seems so alien in our country. Miss Angelica, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation. What are your thoughts?
I'm learning. I'm listening.
Oh, and real quick in there, and everybody, when I get loud, I just get passionate. So I'm not yelling at you. I'm passionate. That's the Latino in me, you know. So, Miss Angelica, what are your thoughts about what we've been talking about in terms of you had firsthand experience with the teachers. What's your stance on the quality of today's teachers?
Well, just to let you know, I'm getting my teacher's credentials right now. I'm working on my teacher's credentials.
You're part of the problem.
What do you mean? So not all teachers are bad. I start my student teaching in January.
Congratulations.
But guess what? The reason why I wanted to become a teacher, obviously my son's been going through all this, so that's another reason why I become a teacher. But I want to become a teacher because I've seen so many horrible teachers that it inspired me to be a good teacher. And you know, a lot of people, when they ask them, well, what inspired you? Oh, this teacher in second grade, this teacher in third grade. My son's horrible teachers inspired me to be a better teacher. And so I've learned that a teacher could make or break a child. There's good stories out there on kids that they've been saved because of teachers.
They could have gone the school to prison route, but there's been good teachers that have cared enough to address the child's needs. But then we have these horrible teachers that let kids fall in between the cracks. And I'm not going to be one of those teachers, but, I believe there are good teachers out there, but I think they're scared. I think they're scared of the unions, and they're scared of these the teachers are bullies. The bullies are the ones that are the loudest. So then you have these teachers that are timid and they don't speak out. And these teachers, the teachers that are the bullies, they overrule the other teachers, and then they're scared. And then you have principals that are on the side of the bullies. So it's just a vicious cycle right there.
I understand. Gee, you've been awful silent here. We've let the ladies take over. What are your thoughts on all this?
No, they're the ones running for office. So their opinions matter for this podcast more than mine. But no, the problem with teachers and bad teachers specifically, at least in our school, that's like a very, very, very small contingent. Mm-hmm. But the problem with just statewide is it's the tenure rules. So like Annette had mentioned, you can't get rid of a bad teacher. You have to get rid of a bunch of good teachers who have been there a lot fewer years than the bad teacher. And then even when you fire all those people, they still have 39 months to be able to get their job back. You can't really hire anyone new unless you've offered each of those people their job. So that's the issue. I for our school, we have, 99% of our teachers are great. And then, the others are okay just because, there just might be some attitude adjustments that they need to get. And, but for the most part, statewide, there are, I always call the teacher the third parent. And
exactly.
I said that to our staff for 1 year, you're our temporary third parent, but that doesn't give the right of what we saw in that video to say, well, we will teach your kid something different than what you want to teach your kid in terms of these social issues.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one way to, the Common Core has figured out 5 different ways of solving 2 + 2. But in the end, the answer is 4. But when you have an issue like, equity and how do you solve, the rich poor gap, okay, there's a bunch of different ways to get there, and let me teach my kids how we should do it, and you teachers stay out of that. And we've been pretty good at our school to say, okay, don't force your opinion on our kids. So,
When people talk about the gap in the rich and the poor, and they're always creating the caste system, I've always felt, well, there's one way the rich can't get back, and that's by helping create a strong education system. But the unions have taken that over, and well, let me ask you this, Angelica and Annette. I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway because it's one of my favorite topics to expose. How much has your local Republican Party helped you financially, Annette? Then we'll go to Angelica.
0.
And what are your thoughts? This is a live stream. You can't just sit and say 0. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that are I've had to put a lot of our own, dollars into this race to do all the things that we have done. And for a position that does not pay you, and I don't know. They haven't helped. Basically we pay them. We basically pay the party in a weird way. It seems crazy, but even to participate in all of this, you're giving the party money, which I appreciate the party's endorsement. So I want to be loyal to the party. And there's so many people on the party that I've grown to love and have a great relationship with. But no, they have not helped me financially at all. But I want to say something to Angelica. Did I say it right? That I think Yeah. Your response to bad teachers is the best response that anybody could ever have. For example, if you have, you encounter a bad doctor and you decide, you know what, I'm going to go into the field of medicine because I've had a bad doctor and I'm going to go out and be a good doctor. I cannot think of a better response than what you've decided to do. I really admire that.
And to the audience, Miss Rosie had to go. Again, I was oblivious to the private chat. She didn't give me a heads up, and I wish I had seen it to give her a chance to tell us where we can find her. But I'll ask Big John to make sure that gets in the notes for her where they can go to find her. So the final topics here before I know, and Helica has three boys there she's got to take care of too. I wanted to, Annette forced my hand here early when I pushed back on the numbers. So in California statewide, and I triple check these numbers, but it's kind of hard to interpret all these numbers sometimes when you're not familiar with them. But what I came up with is for the 23-24 school year, in California, 53% of kids did not meet the English language arts criteria, whatever that is. In mathematics, I assume the English language is reading.
And mathematics, for which grade?
These tests are done at 11th grade. Yeah, see, that's what I was starting to find mixed results. Yes.
Maybe high school?
Yes, high school. 11th grade. Yeah. 11th grade is when these, in fact, I put that in my notes. The 11th grade data is commonly referenced for assessing high school performance. So 53% did not meet English reading requirements. 65% literally did not meet the mathematics. That's statewide. Then when you got to the specific grade of 11th, they had similar numbers. But not to retread what we talked about, that's a problem. So for the three of you guys here, since all three of you serve, or two of you serve, and one of you wants to serve, or one of you is going to become a teacher, let's start with G, and then we'll go to Angelica, then we'll go to Annette. What are your thoughts when you see those numbers? 53% can't read, 65% are struggling with mathematics, or the official term is did not meet the standards. What are your thoughts, G, when you see that?
Well, I saw these stats, and they have not really changed since 2018 when I first ran, and it's been the same. I mean, I really actually had to, you know, rub my eyes and go, am I seeing that correctly? Did not? Did they, like, mix that up? But no, and I believe this is more like 3rd through 12th grade. I mean, the stats are very similar. So part of it is the illegal immigration, right? So you're getting kids coming across the border and they really don't know how to speak English. So they're not going to score well on English, right? So they're going to bring a lot of that down. But a lot of it is in other areas where, you know, most of the kids do speak English. The education system's not that great. I mean, they're teaching to the test, or they're not. I don't know what they're doing. In our school, we're up at like 88% meets and exceeds, right? So, and then we're getting heat because we're not above 90. So we have parents with very, very high standards, which I agree with.
What school district are you?
Rancho Santa Fe.
Rancho Santa
That's
Fe.
That's why you're in the high 80s, because you're not over here in the South Bay.
Yeah. No.
What she said, what Angelica is saying, you're not with the po' folks like us. Yeah. And I'm teasing. But that is a difference in a well-run district of affluent. I think that's a term of affluent people. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. I'm saying that's a good thing. But in the working class of poor districts, we don't get that. We get more power that comes from the teachers union that ends up corrupting the system and brings it down. Now, as far as immigration, that's also a problem in the South, in those areas. And as a former teacher's aide, I can attest to that. Like I said, a third of the class I was assigned to, the reason I was assigned to it is they were all struggling to learn English, and they were holding the kids who did speak, and they were holding the natural Americans back, a lot of the immigrants, and not all of them were illegal. So, you know, so that's a good point, Angelica and G. So Angelica, you're going to become a teacher.
Yes.
How would you attack that? I mean, I don't know if you have an answer. Maybe there isn't, but so I don't want to put you on the spot. But when you see these numbers, what do you think?
I think, I think it's all about engaging with the students. I think it's about assessing students
And I think I know, I think you need to know where you're starting, what your starting point is and where you want to be. And it just has to, you, the teacher just has to, think of strategies. You have to be thinking of different strategies for your kids. There's different ways of teaching. Kids have different ways of learning, and teachers are expected to do this nowadays. You can't just teach in one way. You have to do the UDL style, and you can't just leave a child behind. But it's what's very interesting. I don't want to forget. Our standards are being lowered also here in the South Bay. And I can prove it because my son, one of my children goes to a school here. Can I say the name of the school or does it matter?
Yes, feel free.
So Hilltop Middle School, for instance, they are below standards in math and English because I have the dashboard information here, California dashboard. Just recently, the kids did, they just got the progress report card. And there was about 400 and like 500 kids that were on the honor roll. And that just blew my mind away. I said, wait. How do you go from underperforming in July and June and then July, August, September, October, like in 3 months, all of a sudden this half of the school is on the honor roll. Mm-hmm. So they're lowering the standards for our kids. They're not challenging them like, at your school. Like your school, you said they need to hit the 90%, right? Not our kids. They bring the scores. They bring them high. They want high scores for you guys. For us here at the South Bay, they lower our scores. We don't have to reach that high. As long as these kids are doing the bare minimal, that's fine. And I don't think it's fair. Our kids need to be challenged. Our kids need to learn, but they're giving up on our kids, and that's not right. They're just lowering the standard.
So that's a great point, and I got a great story. So before I started this new startup with John, I was a little lost, and I always wanted to save the world still. So I'm like, I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to go to an Ivy League law school. So I called up my friend who did go to an Ivy League law school, and he was telling me the cost and this. I'm like, man. So I go, do they have anything for Latinos? Because you're Latino? Because nobody knows I'm Latino. He goes, dude, you're in. He goes, on a scale of 100, he goes, the white person has to score like a 120. He goes, then they had it by demographics. The Latinos, I had to score the equivalent of what would be a D, like 60, 70, in comparison to the white guy who had scored like a 125. He goes, you're in. He goes, they want you. And the first thing I thought of was like, oh, my God, how many minorities or not just minorities, but kids in Angelica's type school system where the standards are lower, how many of them get accepted and then they're overwhelmed in college because they're not going to – it's not a participation trophy to take, Econ 101. You got to pass and you got to understand it. That was my first thought. And then my second thought was, oh, my God, not only are they unprepared to go to these schools – then they drop out with $100,000 in debt or whatever debt they have. So I was saddened when he told me that. I was like, well, that's great news for me, you know, I guess. But I thought, you know, because at that point, because I'm 57 now, and I'm like, my generation is coming to an end. It's tomorrow's generation that's here now. And I was just thinking, how many of these kids are, again, more candidates for the prison system, more candidates for being in debt for their whole life because of high cost of school. So that's a great point, Angelica. I don't think they should lower the standards. And the one thing I will always agree with teachers is when they fight that classrooms are too big, too many students. Because Angelica, your plan will not work if you have to have a classroom with 50 kids. You know, you just can't give them the time. That's why I was brought in to help. It was a program that the military had with the local, you know, schools in terms of volunteers. So that's a great point. So Miss Annette, go ahead and hit me over the head. What are your thoughts on this? These numbers?
Well, I think she's right. I mean, now the teachers are expected to have more differentiation, right? Like you were saying that, Angelica, because they have to teach a bunch of different children who have different levels, who are at different levels. So they have a higher, there's more differentiation that is supposed to be happening in the classroom. And I also totally agree, and I've seen this even, I would say, at our school, is that the California state standards are a pretty low bar in general, and maybe they're lower in some districts than others, but I would say in general, it's not a very high bar. And I think our, what happens, and Gene might want to correct me if I'm wrong, is many of our, not your son, who's very bright and very good at math, but many high-performing students leave to go to private schools. That affects how we test out as well. Because we, you know what I'm saying? That is like, we have that as an issue, especially in our district. But you made a point that I want to ask about. So do you think, you're saying that you're taking a district that you say is more affluent and comparing it to a district that might not be as affluent, and you're saying that you think the standards are even lower there?
Yes.
I have a hard time understanding how that can happen, how that takes place, because the lack of parental involvement, the teachers aren't as good. What would be the factors?
That's it. Parents don't know over here. Parents, unfortunately, you know, the majority are Latinos and working class, sometimes with two jobs. And so parents assume that the school is doing the best thing that the, for their student, for their child. And they're not. And so parents are unaware of what's happening in the school. But
wouldn't that be on the parents then?
No. Annette, you're right. But Helica's talking about me. My dad was a military guy, married to his job. You know, my mom worked in a factory, working hard to send money to bring her family out of poverty. Neither one of them were educated. My dad got his GED, you know, in the military or right before to get in or something. My mom was never got it, you know, so they had no clue. And Latinos, we trust authority figures, you know, so they look at the teachers as they're doing their best. But I didn't care about school because I knew no better, and I didn't have parents who understood. You gotta grab this kid by the ear and make him study. So yes, it is on the parents, but that's where it's a symbiotic relationship with teachers. And that's where I am as an adult. I'm like, yes, you need those parent-teacher conferences. And most of the time, you're right, it's the parents who blow it off. You know, now it's becoming both sides. The teachers want to indoctrinate. The parents are busy working. So, and that's the problem in working class and poor neighborhoods. And I'm not picking on you or anybody. It's just educated people understand the importance of education. Non-educated people really don't. And it's something that we have to change. And how we change it, I don't know. But that's a great point, Angelica and Annette. It's I was just smart enough to understand. The smartest thing I did was I dropped out of college because I went to college because everybody else was going to college. But I sat out a year to save money. And then I partied. And then I realized, man, I am wasting thousands of dollars here to get stoned, drink, and hang out with the frat boys. And I wanted to travel. So the smartest decision I ever made was dropping out. And once I matured, I went back and I became a dean to the student. But I was smart. I realized I don't want to dig ditches my whole life. I'm 5'7". My back can't handle that. I mean, that's what I really thought. So I'm like, I had to get an education. But even then, I was an outlier. I was not the norm. Most people would get out, go find a job, you know, be happy moving up as an assistant manager, et cetera. Nothing wrong with that, but we completely don't get how society works to really move up into the six-figure jobs. You know, well, heck, even six-figure jobs in California don't get it anymore. But you know what I'm trying to say.
I don't know if I totally agree with you letting parents off the hook just because they're both working. My mom and dad both work, too. And
I'm not saying to let them off the hook. I'm saying it's part of the problem. But your parents, let me ask you your parents' background.
My dad was a milkman. He had a job on the weekends. My mom, she groomed dogs and she was like a babysitter at home. I mean, neither one of them had a college degree.
But they went to high school and they understood the importance of education to send you to school, right?
To go to college because I was driven and wanted to go to college. But I'm saying they at least knew what was happening with me in school. I mean, they asked me, they knew how I was doing in school. They were aware.
There's a term that we call it, we're urchins in the street urchins. because it's not that our parents don't care. That's just how that culture is. And part, you're right. It, at the end of the day, you're right in that. It is on the parents. What I'm trying to say is the parents aren't going to look in the mirror and figure it out because most of them don't realize they have something they need to figure out. So sometimes they do need help, and that's where teachers can come in.
Well, the big fight you're saying is also parental rights, right? The parents want to know what's happening at the school. That's another fight that we're having in California, right? The AB 1955.
Right. And parents are slowly starting to get it. Look at Angelica with her kid. You know, so it is, we are becoming, as we get more civilized and more civilized, parents are starting to understand the importance of education. But there's a whole swath of parents out there that don't have a clue for whatever reason. There's a reason our prison systems are so filled is because of the culture of parents.
Then why are they having kids then? What do you mean? There's a swath of parents who don't have a clue. That's a very scary statement.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, that's a completely different topic. Nobody talks to. It starts with the fact that in high school when I was a kid, they didn't teach me how to balance a checkbook. I had to figure that out after I got my first job. Okay, I never had balance. They didn't teach me about the basics of this was going to happen when you graduate high school and go into the workforce, you know? So that's where it starts, you know? It's education. I hate to say this, but Hillary was right. It takes a community.
The difference is it takes a village.
It takes a village. But the difference is she wants to control the kids in that village. I'm like, it takes a village, meaning the community needs to work together. Parents need to help one another out. You know, yeah. And when I was growing up, there were parents who were willing to do that. But my mom was so concerned with bringing her family out of poverty. And I don't fault her. My family in Panama went from being adults in the 70s and early 80s in an outhouse and showering in the river to now they have running water. Now they live in a nice house. My aunt she's our most educated Panamanian on our side of family. She has her master's as a teacher.
You're saying the focus was survival, and I appreciate that.
Yes,
I mean,
survival precedes education because the parent doesn't understand. And Angelica, I suspect we probably have our backgrounds are probably more aligned than not. I'm just speculating.
Yes, and I think that's what the difference is. That my parents were not from. My parents were from Tijuana, and so. They didn't understand the culture or how the school system was here. And so they just took whatever they got. I didn't do so good in high school, but, and I feel that, if my mom knew better, like I know it would have been different for me. I think my mom would have fought for me because my mom is a fighter and she would go to the school, but she didn't know that she could, go against the school. And so I was born I came to the United States when I was 10, but I was born here, but I lived in Tijuana till I was 10 years old. But I came to school here, and I know the culture, I know the school system, so I can help my son. It's different when you don't come to school here, and you come in as an adult, you don't know what to expect, you don't know what your rights are. That's what it is. You don't know what your rights are.
Right. And that's why I get upset at what we're losing in this country. All those things that help the average American rise up and better themselves, that smart immigrants realize and they do, we're losing all of that, you know? And that's why I get angry, because as an adult, I know the importance of education. As a child, I didn't care, and I had parents who were clueless. And you're right, it's on the parents, because I get frustrated. I've never forgiven my parents. I've accepted that's just who they were. They didn't know any better. How can you fault somebody who just didn't know any better, you know? But there are times when I look back at my life, man, if my dad had done this, mm-hmm. I'd be a completely different person. All my success, I ended up learning myself on my own through trials and tribulations. But maybe if I had had a father more involved, had smacked me on the head a few times, had done this, had done that, I could be something completely different. Instead, I was a sailor. I had a seedy background because I was a wild child. And instead, I could have been tomorrow's president, you know, because that's how I look at every kid. You know, who knows what door could have been opened, but it starts with parenting. And I get angry at the school system because it's a symbiotic relationship and they need to teach. And they need to sit that parent down, especially that lower income, well, not lower income, I don't know, what's Angelica, the immigrant
parents type that parent. Don't, or parents that don't know. They just don't know what the policies are.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I get so angry at the school system. And I don't get angry at the rich, but in just us talking today, I realized, wow, if there is one way the rich can help, that would be by strengthening our school systems financially, empowering them. But instead, they've allowed the teachers to take over and they send their kids to private school. That's the thing that bugs me about a lot of school boards. Those kids go to the kids on those public school boards. Their kids go to private schools.
Sometimes that's true.
You know, and then when I hear politicians talking about public school, this public school, that, and Gavin Newsom, where's your kids, Gavin? Oh, they're in private school. But that's beside the point, you know? So anyway, my final point or question here to you guys is, you're never going to have a sub-zero for anything. But when I see an 84% graduation rate, and let's be real, a lot of these kids in the ghettos, the barrios, and the trailer parks, they're not all graduating with proper reading and math skills, but they're graduating. But when I look at an 84%, that's stunning, because I would imagine when I grew up as a child, I can count on one hand how many kids were held back or took another year to graduate. But literally, it was like literally 99% graduation rate. So when I see 84%, I'm like, what the hell? G, we'll start with you.
No, I wonder what they're doing. This goes back to, I think part of it goes back to Angelica. You said that there are 38 students in your son's class.
Yeah.
And in ours, you know, we have a maximum of 20. Now we have more money, you know, but wow, we have a maximum of 20. So in the same school day, the teacher is really able to get in there and help each child. Teacher has.
I'm gonna get my charger. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, no, that's fine.
I'll stop it.
So, and even at, you know, 30 to 40 students per teacher, you know, I do wonder, like, what's going on there? Is this a culture that prizes education? Is the problem there that our culture doesn't prize it as much? Because when you look at TikTok videos, what's being and this might sound a little crude, but what's being pushed to our kids are boobs and butts, right? But what's being pushed to, and because it's run by the Chinese, what's being pushed to Chinese kids in China is science experiments and math problems. And you sit there and go, okay, well, is it partly our culture's fault? Is it partly, you know, what our students want to learn? Do they see a future in getting a high school education? I mean, let alone college, right? That's just the high school graduation rate. So,
I'm like fully on board with everything you say. And again, to us immigrants, we see America as, I always screw this up. What is it? The city on the hill? What's that saying?
My dad always said, coming from India, is like, that's the country where the streets are lined with gold, you know, paved with gold. That's what
Big John chiming in.
Wrong person.
But my point is we're losing that because there was a time when I was a kid growing up, I took pride when I'd see the stats because I was American, that we were leading in the world at this or in the top three in education. Now we're like 18, the 20s, the 40s worldwide. So I think there's a saying that during hard times, good men rise to power, and then during good times, they become, you know, it goes south.
Hard times create strong men. Strong men create weak something, and then it's like that cycle. But I think it's hard times create strong men.
And I think we're in the times where it's going south, it's going bad. I'm 100%. Annette, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, we've been sort of all over the place because there's not really any definitive answers for some of these things right now. And we're trying to like pinpoint some of the problems that are happening. It's parents. Okay. Parents have to be involved with their kids, though, William. I mean, I'm sorry, but there's no excuse for that. There isn't.
I'm just telling you why.
But what do you mean why? Why? Because
they don't know how to know
the policy at a school.
No, they don't. They count on the teacher. See, you're making the mistake that I see a lot of educated people. You make assumptions that seem natural and logical, because I do it too. But in a different world, in a different culture, it's just that, a completely different world culture. And it's ironic, because my mother paid for...
You have to know, but they came here for a better life. So what does that better life mean?
No. A better life to an immigrant, what's that usually mean? Think about it. What's a better life to... No. Money. Being able to afford to raise your family. Being able to afford to put food on the table. And a factory job that pays $12 an hour in my mom's day, that baseline pay, that she got bonuses for the more yarn she produced, is a lot better in the States than the dollar an hour she'd be earning in Panama.
You both are right. Because, William, you're right, because the people who come here, the adults, they just want the better paying job so that they can afford the better school for their kids. So they can become a doctor, lawyer, and not a loser, which is what my parents said to me.
That's an Indian mentality. See, what I'm trying to tell you, Annette, is she's right. But I'm one of these, I have no shame. I admire the Asian culture. I admire the Jewish culture. I admire the Indian culture. I just wish the Indian culture had a little bit more personality, G.
Okay.
Well, we have personality. We just don't get into the NFL. We just don't have athleticism.
I've worked with Indians for 20 years, and I've actually talked to an Indian VP at a company, and he's like, yeah, we're not the creative blocks. We're the technical type people. And he goes, that's a problem in jobs where clients ask them to be creative. And we had that conversation because I was asking their people to be creative. And it's just, I'm digressing. But the Indian culture is different. In the Latino culture, it's about getting that better paying job. And because we've never dealt with education, it's a real big class system in Latin American countries. The poor versus the rich. The poor tend to be uneducated. And you can't – I can see it in your face. You're struggling to comprehend that, you know. But it's true. Yeah, but you're right, though, Annette. You're right. It does fall at the feet of the parent. My question is, how do we make the parent understand? And that's why I keep saying all throughout the show, it's a symbiotic relationship with the teacher. You know, the teacher has to be in that parent's face. Instead, what do we get? My son don't lie. I believe my son. No, lady, parent, your son is little Johnny too, you know? So you're right. At the end of the day, it is a parent. But teachers have forgotten their role because I think that a lot of them have stopped caring for whatever reason, you know?
No, I think that they might have stopped caring. But the truth is, we don't really want the teacher to take the parental role.
Well, we
do want them to educate our students.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, they're not even doing that.
The educational role. That's what I'm talking about. You know?
Yeah. Let me give you an example. I need to understand the Latino culture, though, just for a second. Are you telling me that the Latino culture doesn't value education?
I'm saying the Latino culture, the poor, don't understand the importance of education.
I disagree with you. How do you say that? They don't understand.
I lived it my whole life. I saw it with my relatives, my friends. I saw it with literally everybody. And there's a segment. There's a segment, though, that does get it, and their kids go on. But there's a majority segment that doesn't. See, this is a great conversation because I always tell people we live in two different worlds. I've been able to transgress both worlds. You know, when I go back to Panama, man, they admire me. They love me. They look at me as a guy who made it. In reality, I was a middle-class guy. But that's how they look at me. Man, they're always asking me 10 zillion questions about America, about the jobs. It's alien to them. And it has nothing to do with anything except the fact they're so poor. Their first and foremost thing is to earn money.
They value success. But they don't put success and education together.
Yeah, because we're in my barrio, where my cousins and all are at, it's middle class, but success can be being a great drug dealer, you know? Success can be working at the factory. Success can be, oh, you own your taxi. They don't think bigger. well, maybe I could build a fleet of taxis. You know, maybe I could sit there and take this small business and do this. We think smaller. We think more survival. And it's not just us. It's the Black culture. You know, also it's a mentality. And I'm not generalizing that every single person, because there is a caste system. Because in Panama, all the rich, where do they send their kids? The school in the States, you know, to the universities in the States. You know, so it's not everybody, but my parents just don't know. They just don't understand, you know, or they
get
it.
Well, I will say that there's a bias here, and the bias is survivorship bias, right? So if you're Latin culture, I mean, presumably all you need is a bus ticket and walk a few miles, right, to get to America. Mm-hmm. Whereas to come from India, you have to have enough money to...
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Angelica's been out there.
Sorry. Yeah, you need enough money to form a plane ticket and to get over here. So presumably most Indians that do actually come over here achieved a higher level of success in India, so they bring that with them, right? So, but when you go to India, I mean, one out of six people look like me around the world, 1.2 billion people there, they're not all like, you know, super smart, super wealthy.
They're not that.
I mean, so I think there's a bit of survivorship bias where, like, okay, you get kind of the cream of the crop of Indians and Asians coming here. And then we assume that, okay, well, that's just all Indians and Asians, right? Chinese, Japanese, or whatnot. But there's just fewer of them coming here.
No. Not, it's like I saw it in the movie. In both cases, you know, bro, just because I'm Black doesn't mean I'm good at basketball, or just because I'm Asian doesn't mean I'm Bruce Lee. And I'm like, you know, and it's true. We get these stereotypes. But Angelica, while you were off, Annette was struggling to understand that we Latinos are more about that come here for the better jobs. We're more about surviving. About feeding the family, things like that, and education gets put secondary. And not everybody, but for a lot of the poor. And then G brought up a good point. You know, when you see the quality of the Asians coming over, the Indians coming over, and then you see the quality of the Latinos. Our system has been set up in the States to accept the poor versus the qualified from most Latino countries than other countries. Why that's happened? I think it's because of since the 80s and the 90s, the Democrats started to make a change and start the push towards just getting more brown people in. I personally believe it's because of Roe versus Wade, and the Black culture was no longer growing, and they needed a foundational voting base. And that sounds mean and crass, but that's what I believe in my heart to a degree. So Angelica, you want to chime in here? Help me out.
Yes, I was listening and I'm thinking, you know, why, you know, about our culture, but I was thinking, I think we have lower standards. Yes. I think like the Hispanic culture, I think we might have lower standards, and we might just be grateful that, you know what, I have a job, you know, I have a job here at Walmart, and, you know, I should be thankful because I got a job here, and I, you know, compared to working in Mexico where I was making, I don't know, $20 a week, now I'm making $200 a week. I feel maybe they settle for what they get, and then also our schools here are underfunded, and I feel like what the parents don't know. Like I've been to different schools. I can see the difference, the quality of other schools may have than the schools that we have here. Like that's a San Diego Unified. Every school has a Permitium board, a smart board, and every student has a laptop. That doesn't happen here in South Bay. There's no Permitium boards, and students have iPads in the middle school, and they don't have any computers in elementary. So that's what also these resources are what helps students academically too. It's not the same.
No, you're absolutely correct, and it's not just Latinos. Now I get angry at Black leadership because I'm like, you're American. You know the importance of education. You're holding positions of power as political leaders, as captains of industry, like the former owner of a BET television, who he sold it to Viacom for a few billion, you know? So I'm like, you should be helping your own people, because you're in place to receive the force issue, you know? So I get angry at black leadership. I get angry at Latino leadership, because Annette, the people who could affect this change, who immigrants and poor blacks listen to, they're not giving us this message. They're all about the rah, rah, rah indoctrination, hate the white guy, politicization that's happening in this country at this moment. Maybe 20 years ago it was different, but it was just a different issue. Same results.
Go ahead. Well, I think Angelica brought up a really interesting point, because she was saying about expectations, and it made me wonder, what does a good life look like? Like, we're not all striving for that same end. Mm-hmm. Are we?
That's true. That's true.
It all depends. I mean, well, what a good life looks like is in relation to where the person has come from.
Yes.
My mother is so grateful that she has her nice, beautiful little house, you know, well, it's not a little house, it's a normal size house, but my dad was a 30-year, he achieved phenomenal success as a military man. They're grateful. They have three retirements my dad has. They're not living large, but they're living well. They don't have to worry about where the next check is, but yet they're middle class, but they're happy with that. And immigrants, we're talking Latinos, immigrants from Italy, from Greece, back in the 30s and 40s, the same way. They were happy that they got their piece of the American pie, got their little brownstone there in New York City. You know, they raised their families because it was much better than what they came from. Now, that said, I get frustrated because I am of the belief that each generation should do better. And that's gotten lost in translation. Now, granted, society's completely changed, and I think maybe two or three generations that kind of stopped, meaning the kids weren't doing better than the parents. But you always end up, you always peak at a certain thing. But still, I still see it that way. The children should have the benefits to be able to strive to do just as well as the parents. But our institutions are failing us. Is there anybody who disagrees that colleges have become a factory of indoctrination versus a factory of education? And I think that's where, I always say this. If we could teach our kids to critically think, I call it being the why guy. Well, why? Not because you want to be an asshole, but because you just want to learn. You know, why? Why? And once you learn, why, oh, I get it. That's how I learn. Oh, I get it now. I had a meeting this morning with this guy who is 100% lithium batteries are safe. I said, that's not what our group is about. Our group is about researching everything about these lithium batteries. He didn't understand why I wanted him to do it, because he was okay with the why. So he was living in his narrow-minded world. When you become a why person, your world grows exponentially. You know, so, and that's important. I was going to make a 7-Eleven joke, G. I'm sorry. I held back.
Well, people start disliking you when you become a why person.
Yes, but that's because most white people are jerks. They're just asking why to be jerks. That's why I say critical thinking. But with critical thinking, you're asking why, but you're asking to learn, to understand. Because
right.
if you
right.
understand, you become a better person. Too many times, there's a bunch of punk kids out there. Why? Because they're just
no, but that's jerks. Okay. You know, I ask why. Hey, why did this happen? When I go to the school district, why aren't you guys doing anything? Why people don't like why people, because they like you said, that we're critical thinking, we learn more, we get more information, and they don't want us to have information because they still want to control us.
Right, and that's indoctrination.
I think that G, though, made a really good point. Maybe you heard it or not, I don't know, but, and I'm saying your name wrong every time.
Angelica.
Angelica. But the way you say it, well, I can't say it.
You don't have to pull a Kamala.
It's really bad when I don't say someone's name properly. But okay, so, but Gene, you made a great point, because the question might be, does our culture value education? I'm not sure, G, and also you made a really good point too. And this is what I definitely see with my daughters, Angelica. I have five daughters. And when I see how ingrained they are in the TikTok culture and how sort of like seduced that they are by like the life on a boat and the outfit and they're somewhere, and I'm like, well, how do they think they're going to achieve that? I literally have no idea how they think they're going to get from, like, here to there. But I don't think that they think education is the way to get there. They're sort of seduced by a lifestyle or glamour or something, and I'm not really sure right now, besides sort of like this materialistic world,
yes,
what captures the attention of our youth. And I'm not sure we're actually saying that there's value in education for the sake of the innate curiosity that I think we all have. And because, like you said, to ask questions and to learn and to grow as human beings and to have meaning and purpose in our lives.
Let me throw a twist in here. What is education? Who are the fastest growing millionaires? Who are the fastest growing millionaires right now?
Probably the tech people, right?
Nope.
You're talking nationality, right?
No. Jobs.
Jobs.
Type of industry.
The TikTok.
Plumbers.
What?
So my whole point is Mike Rowe is onto something. And real quick, we've talked about a lot to the point
we
don't even know where to start. That's how messed up this system is right now, in my opinion. But that said, Mike Rowe is onto something. When people ask me, nobody's asked me, when I think about it, you know, if I could go back and do it again, I'd go to trade school to be a computer graphic artist because I've had a passion about that. And
that's what Mike Rowe was.
No, I don't like to hit toilets. Yeah. But
the millionaires, they're the fastest growing.
What? Yes, I didn't read the article. I just saw the opening paragraph. They're the fastest growing and becoming, because look, who doesn't need, those are jobs that people don't want. They're in high demand and you're going to pay regardless of what that price is, because you don't want that toilet to overflow or you don't want that AC unit to stop working. So what I'm trying to say is, what is education? We're all assuming college. This whole conversation we've had, I'm speculating, but I'm pretty sure in the back of our heads, we're all referencing college as a higher education. So what is an education? Is it becoming an apprentice, becoming a plumber, building out your own plumbing company, your own vent company, a restaurateur, there's a term for it. You know, my point is, it's not always that white collar job. Restaurateur, thank you, G.
Yeah.
A restaurateur. Or we're also in the era of entrepreneurship, you know?
Every 7-Eleven owner, is a CEO.
Yes. Yeah, and they're earning six figures if they run a good one, you know, or they run it properly. So my I don't want to drag this up. I think that's a great question. What is the better education today? A four-year college where you're going into $400,000 to $500,000 debt just from college. I'm not talking lawyers or doctors where you have to go into even more college, you know, or is it a trade school where you're learning a trade where there's an actual job waiting for you versus the liberal arts and you hate the white man or you hate the rich people and yet you're women's studies. I was chastised by my women's studies teacher because, you know, I was working, going to school. So when it came to electives, you take what's available. I ended up taking 3 women's studies courses just because they filled my electives. I was chastised because when I sat there and raised my hand for some question. No, I would not hire a women's studies major over a business major, because at least the business major has the outline and thoughts of how a business should work. And I'm not working to make myself feel good. I'm working for a boss who wants me to hire the person who can come in and hit the ground running as hard as possible. So my question to you guys is, you know where I stand, where do you see is the better education today? We'll start with you, G, Mr. Econ.
Better education in terms of all of the categories that you brought up?
Yeah, all the factors, the cost of college, what you're actually, the cost of college / debt, what you're actually learning, the jobs that are actually available out there. What I'm asking is, do we really need a 4-year degree anymore?
No, you don't. And you just need, it gives you cred, right? So in my field, there are plenty of software engineers who don't have a degree. But you have to prove a lot more before you can get that higher salary, right? if I get your resume, there's no college degree on there, then I'm questioning whether you actually know, right? Or you're just making it up.
Oh, so, no. Hold on. There could be a trade school degree instead of college degree. That's what I'm saying.
No, but still, there is still value in the college degree. Now, it's just a matter of how much did you pay for that college degree and whether it's worth it. So I'll tell you a story. And I was just talking to a parent at the school. He's an anesthesiologist. He said that he's been getting the same pay since 2020. Now, we all know inflation's gone up 20-some-odd percent since 2020, right? So he's basically gotten about a 24% pay cut, right? Because inflation's gone up about 24%. So he's gotten a 24% pay cut. He's a doctor. So, you know, I mean, even in those fields, you're going to make a lot more. I mean, he's doing really well.
And even then, G, how many doctors jump into the cosmetic type surgeries because it's much more lucrative? You know,
it is much more lucrative. Yeah, you're right. Because they're not bound by the negotiated rates by Medicare, right? Medicare is the problem. And I don't want to get down into that tangent of discussion. That's for another day. But so it just depends. I mean, pick a good career where there's a lot of demand and low supply. Like you said, people who are not willing to do something increases the demand for that service, right? And I remember I was 24, 25, and one of my friends who lived near UCSD, he told me something interesting, and it took me a long time to figure it out. He said, gee, the most successful people do the things that most people are not willing to do. Hmm. He was talking about sales, right? Getting on the phone and telemarketing, like people don't want to do that. So you get paid big bucks not as a telemarketer, but when you run a firm like that. But sales, people don't like to do that. They don't like to ask for money. They don't like to pressure people. But salespeople, if you're good at it, you make a ton of money. So again, like you said, the plumbers, right? The sewer guys, Mike Rowe. I mean, I don't want to be walking in galoshes and, you know, millions of people's, you know, excrement, but they make a lot of money. So
we've come a long way from Ed Norton, haven't we? You know, and the story I always tell is the importance of a college degree, which is what G's referencing for, is when times are tough, if you have a college degree, and I've told this story so long, I'm dating myself here. If you have a college degree, you're going to get hired at least as an assistant manager at Blockbuster. If you don't, you're going to be the one stocking the shelves. So at its core, that's the difference. But there are so many issues that way.
One of the guys running in the school board race here in Rancho Santa Fe, he's run an earth moving company since 1986. And it's just highly successful business. And he had no college degree. So it just depends on what you do with it and where you go. And
it's determination. It's your determination also.
Yeah.
I mean, true. I agree. I set my partner up who didn't have a college degree with a VP job that was going to be mine. But being a good boss, a good leader, when I left the organization, I just had it. They wanted to buy my board seat. I said, no, I promised it to my partner. Didn't have a college degree. I wasn't slated for that, and I took care of him. So I also think, you know, it's also having good mentors, good leaders out there to help you along. And that's where teachers come in with parents to bring it all the way around. So we've been here for 2 hours and 12 minutes. So, and it's passionate. Angelica, we're supposed to talk about Kamala now. I don't know. Do you two still have the energy for that?
Well, it's already 9:00. I don't know if you guys can hear my kids yelling. They're playing video games. I'm missing the fun.
So we're going to end this topic. But Angelica, before you go, I wanted you to tell us where they can find you and what race you're running for.
So I have my website. It's Angelica Martinez for for Sweetwater Union High School District, and it's SUHSD.com. So again, it's Angelica Martinez, FORSUHSD.com. And I'm on Facebook. I don't know what the
how Facebook.
We will put those in the notes section. I always say that, so I'll follow up with John to make sure we get those in there. He's leery of outside links, but we'll make sure we get those in there because I think it's important to get individuals such as yourself who are willing to fight for the students first,
yes,
versus what others want. So we thank you for coming on. I just met Angelica. Her story moved me at the Lexit meeting. And I hope to see you again, Angelica, before it's all said and done. And maybe
good
before the Lexit.
Thank you
board.
So much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, guys. You guys ready?
Oh, my gosh. How are you going to go till midnight?
Why not? You guys got me in a feisty mood.
Well, I think we need to finish that conversation at some point. Because I think of it is about, what you talk about all the time, William, what you talk about the American dream, which is something that is different for everyone. So I think that's something that's hard to define. Maybe for some people, it's not about an education, like you were saying earlier.
Oh, no, my dad and my mom.
Yeah.
And their minds.
You made a lot of really interesting points. Like, we could dive into that again at another point, I think. It's interesting.
Yep.
All right, let's move on. The Saboteur's Playbook, A Candidate's Guide to Self-Destruction. Let's get the ugly stuff out of the way. I think this is very important to talk about in today's politics is tribalism. Joe Biden once said, if you don't vote Democrat, you ain't black, or something to that effect. And that brought the whole monolithic conversation up. And everybody can say, no, blacks aren't monolithic. And I'm like, yeah, they are monolithic when it comes to voting. They 90% vote Democrat. I have conservative friends. Come November, cha-ching Democrat. Here is my validation of that.
And you're coming up with all kinds of reasons and excuses. I've got a problem with that. Because part of it makes me think, I'm speaking to men directly now, part of it makes me think that, well, you just aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. And you're coming up with other alternatives and other reasons for that. That's not acceptable.
All right. He was telling young black men, you got to vote for Kamala. This was the response there comes a point where all ex-presidents lose the gravitas, the power, the sway they had. Clinton, as much beloved as he is, he's a train wreck the last 2 to 3 election cycles going out campaigning. For Obama, I believe Obama was propped up by the media. I believe he was not the man they claimed to be. And black Americans, especially young black men, are realizing that. So here is one response. And I apologize to the audience. Some would say it's crude. To me, it's just guy talk. You know? This was a response. I'm going to have two responses. This was the ugly response in the sense of language and all that. Then there's going to be the response I'm going to show that I totally agree with. But here's the first one. And there were 10 zillion of these out there. So I went to two extremes.
So they sent Obama to come get us and bring us back to the Democratic plantation. He like it. They sent Obama back to come get us. He insulted us. He said, I was highly offended when he said the only reason we voting for Donald Trump is because we don't want a woman in president, so we come up with, yo, nigga, shut up. Shut up. Yo, speak for me. Yo, speak for me. Yo, speak for a lot of us. Fuck out of here. You gonna tell us what we think? Come on, man. Who the fuck are y'all? That shit pissed me off, man. Fuck out of here. You gonna tell us how we need to think and what we should think. Man, shut up, man. Fuck out of here. You gonna bring Barack Obama. He gonna play us. First, y'all call us low-informed voters, low-information voters, misinformed voters. Now you want to come out and throw my mama in this shit. Fuck that. If my mom's was president, I ain't voting for her. My grandmother could be my mom. I wouldn't vote for them either. And they got the same radical policies. Shit pissing me off, man. Watching this video with this motherfucker, man. This dude gonna come up here and tell us how we need to think. Yo, get the fuck out of here, man. Go back to the White House. Or wherever you came from, Barry. Now you want to address us like brothers. I ain't been your brother. Where was you at in 2008, Negro? Fuck out of here.
Now that was very crude. But he is angry that Obama's telling black, he's as a black man, he's like, who are you to tell me as a black man to vote? Translation, the Democrat Party views black Americans as monolithic. You either vote for our candidate or you ain't black. And that's what Obama was saying. And that's one reason I got into politics, because I got tired of people wanting to do that. Again, these people, this goes back to what G has, what we've all talked about, economics. These black men are seeing themselves muted, not allowed to speak their minds, not allowed to be who they are. There are a lot of black men who are friends of mine in North Carolina. When I go back and talk to them, we have this conversation. They're angry. You know, they feel as if they're being canceled as a culture. You know, one of my friends, I joked, oh, yeah, what are you talking about, bro? They got RuPaul. And I said it jokingly. He got pissed. He's like, he goes, that's my boy, blah, blah, blah. So this next one here is how I feel about it, you know, in terms, because I grew up with equality, not equity. I viewed my brown cousins, my black cousins, my brown and black and Asian friends as equals, because that's how I grew up. And I was naive until I left my hometown, which was very diverse in terms of how much racism. So I understood that. But this is why I got into politics, is because of this guy's response, because equality means we treat everybody the same. Oops, hold on, where'd he go? Oh no, where'd he go? Did I miss it? Son of a gun.
The link?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me go back to the link. Good call, G. Oh yeah, yeah, there it is. Here we go, here we go. All right, here we go.
Democrats then unleashed Barack Obama into the wild to shame us black men for not supporting Kamala Harris, despite the fact that she's yet to unveil any policies that represent our interests. Why is it okay that everybody gets to come out here and shame this one demographic of people for how we vote or how we question where our vote goes? But if it was a white politician shaming other white men for not voting based on identity politics, y'all will call him racist. Why is it okay for Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, and all these other people that supposedly look like me, why is it okay for them to get on TV and shame me for not voting for them simply because they look like me? That shit is racist, brother. I don't know how else to put it. That is racist. I don't have to vote for Kamala because she's quote-unquote black. Just like I shouldn't have voted for your ass, because you got up there, you tap danced for the establishment, and you ain't do a goddamn for the black people that put you in office. Fuck you, brother.
Now, that was important to me, because that's how I see Latinos and blacks. I'm like, brothers, you got to think for yourself. You can't just listen to what somebody says to do just because they're the same culture or color. And I didn't realize until this past month that I just completely missed the obvious. When you do try to think for yourself, as these individuals are pointing out, they're chastised, they're criticized. And that's just racist, what he's saying. Meaning you're saying, and Joe Biden said it, you know, if you don't vote for them, for me, you're not black. You know, so to see this happening makes me happy, because again, maybe critical thinking is the wrong term here, but they're starting to go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Just because you're saying it doesn't mean I'm going to follow this time. However they got there, which I believe, as G has always said, it's economics, meaning they're looking at jobs, they're looking at paying the bills. They're pushing back. because I used to get irked at the fact that, like, why are you voting for Obama? He's done nothing to help you. You know, why are you voting for that Chicago Latino? Why are you voting for all these Latinos here in San Diego? Because they're Latino, they're, especially in the city council races down there. You know, they're voting for them just because they're Latino. I'm like, what the bleep? You know, so to see this is why I wanted to talk about it. That's how important it is to see this pushback. And I just wanted to get your reactions from your worlds, your backgrounds, your cultures. And I'm not differentiating, saying they're different. It's just we're all shaped differently as we grow up. Let's start with you, G, then we'll go to Miss Annette there.
Yeah, I mean, if Bobby Jindal or Vivek Ramaswamy said, if you don't vote for me, then you're not really Indian, I would be like, what are you talking about, man? Like, that is an absurd statement. And you know what I thought was funny is, and you know, it, that Obama clip's a little hard to hear, but he said, Kamala's someone who grew up just like you did? You mean all those people grew up with single Indian mothers? With samosas and dal and rice in the morning? Is that how they grew up? I don't think so. And so, you know, there is a difference between being black and having that culture or that background, right? And I think a lot of the black population, they look at her and they go, she doesn't know what we're all about. She doesn't know how we grew up. She's never lived in our hood. She lived in Montreal, right? And then California, Berkeley, California. And her two parents were professors. I don't think many people can relate to her. So I think that's absurd. And I think my second point that I would make is going back to the idea that, you know, Obama's kind of a washed up politician. I think there's a lot of respect for him, but I think a lot of people look at him and especially in 2008 and said, this is a historic moment that for the black population of America, things will finally turn around. And I remember that feeling in 2008. Everyone was talking about it, right? I voted for McCain, but I know a lot of my friends are talking about it. And my friend who is my the best man at my wedding, he goes, this isn't the White House anymore. It's the Black House. And I'm like,
I remember that too. Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, after 8 years, not much changed. And then Trump got into office and then things did change. He created opportunity zones in black neighborhoods, right? And then COVID kind of messed everything up, right? And the election, there's a big, like, I don't know what happened during that election. And people are looking back going, well, if I had to make a choice, I'm choosing Trump. So now I think Kamala's support amongst the black population is the lowest since 1960.
42%.
Yeah. And that's not 42% like of the black population. That's the 42% differential between.
Right. Thank you. You know, and he said that. He goes, he said it in very colorful language, like, I voted for you, and I shouldn't have, because you're right. We need this movement, because we're not going to move forward as a country in that until we start to think for ourselves and look at, to say it in a short way, we have damned MLK's greatest words he said. Look at the character. Versus anything else.
The content of their character, not the color of the skin.
Exactly. And we've thrown that to the wayside to create tribalistic politics. So for me to see this makes me happy, because I don't care if the president is white, black, or a woman. Now, I'm not going to lie. Deep down growing up, hey, boys are boys. Yeah, right, you know, you get that competition. But at the end of the day, I don't care, and I'm glad to see that with these black men. What are your thoughts on this, white woman?
Well, it gives me a lot of hope, actually. It does. It's a really hopeful thing to see them, they're disenfranchised, and to see them standing up for themselves and saying, you're not going to tell me how to think. I love that, which means what you said, they're thinking for themselves. Isn't that what we want a good education to do for us, help us think for themselves so they're not like sheep? So it actually gives me a lot of hope.
And change.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it. I'm a big Obama fan over here, just ha, ha, ha.
But, well, that's right. You voted for Obama. Get out of here, woman.
No, I did not. But I gave a lot of money to his campaign, I guess.
Oh gosh. Now people don't know your story. That's how politics works. They will turn a good deed and something you believe in for completely different reasons into a bludgeon against you. And that's what I do hate about politics, but
it's so nasty.
And like I say, life's not fair. I mean, honestly, I told you guys, I got a wonderful, beautiful wife. I don't want to put her through the dregs of running because I would be mean and nasty. I would be called to mile with the righteous truth, but she would be the one who would suffer. So how many people, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I think I'd love the people and would try to do my best. My lot in life is because I've made those decisions, but at what cost to her? So how many people are in that same position that I'm not going to go through that crap. Screw that. You know, so we lose a lot of good people who would be willing to serve.
I agree. I agree with you 100% because of what we do to the people who are running. It's terrible.
Yep. Exactly. Now, if I was single, I'd be Bill Clinton. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. It's just a sailor in me. My mom would slap me all the time, and I grew up treating women decently. But I do have that male chauvinistic big mind at times.
I'm actually not really very much of a good feminist. I mean, first of all, I would never vote for Kamala. I would never vote for anyone just because they were a woman. Same sort of idea. I wouldn't. I would want it to be because there was the merit. But honestly, I can't even think of a woman that I would ever want. What?
Let me ask you this question. I believe this in my heart. And when a woman says, well, who are you to comment on women? I'm like, well, you have no issues commenting on men, so I'm going to comment on women. I, in my heart, believe a feminist, when the movement started, it was about a woman having the choice to make her own decision. And I think when the 60s and the hippies era and the bra burning started, it went from a woman making her own choice to you either support abortion rights and you want to make it a career and you will make it a career, or you're not a feminist. I think it was bastardized, to use a male term there, along the way, where I, in my heart, a feminist is just a woman who makes her own choice. And if she wants to be a mother and that's a choice she makes, that doesn't mean she's not a feminist. That's how I have viewed the definition of feminism. Am I off? Am I wrong? Preach to me, sister.
No, I think you're right. And I do think it went down that road. And so then it became all about the abortion rights and all about like a woman being able to sort of like own their own body and make the choices about their own body. And I think even like that meant, hey, I can be promiscuous or I can sell my body, but it's my body and I can do what I want with it. Like this sort of like that sexual freedom, I think came along with it too. But I don't think that was actually a good thing for women.
I don't know if it was good or bad, but I think they turned it into something. And what I'm trying to say is, okay, that's your choice. That's fine. But there's ramifications for every choice you make.
Correct. Yeah. That's the best point you could have said about that. There are consequences. Absolutely. But anyway, I don't think I would ever, I can't think of a woman president that I would ever want. I like the idea of a man being a president. I don't know what it is about me. Maybe I'm like really old fashioned.
I'm digressing, but I got to ask this question because I always hear people say this seriously, but I've never taken it serious. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But there's a lot of men who believe you can't have a woman as president. She's too emotional. I've never put stock into that. When you hear that, G, now we should avoid that topic. I don't want to put anybody on the spot.
But I think it's really interesting. Why can't I think it's an interesting topic. It's interesting.
Well, for you it is, not for G. G's got to like, you know, what are you doing to me, William? Yeah. All right.
We have plenty of other questions coming up.
Let's have some fun. So it turns out we have got 1, 2, 3. We have 4 Democrat candidates running. 5, actually. We have Kamala the Latina, Kamala the Southern woman, the Southern Belle, Kamala the Black American. Twice, I guess, in my notes here. So let's start off with Kamala Essay.
And we have the Jamaican.
Now, I didn't put the Jamaican because she was obviously joking on that one. But this wasn't a joke. She was just trying to play it off. Y'all, I understand y'all. No Carolina, that's right. So let's get to that. I cracked myself up. Sorry. All right. This is Kamala La Latina.
I love you back.
Did you notice the accent she put on there? You kind of had to really hear it. But she changes her accent. That's Kamala the Latina. We'll go through them all, then we'll comment and talk about it. Again, this segment's just for fun. You know, oh, somebody's pinging me, is that Big John?
No, that's the YouTube I sent. You can play it after these clips.
Okay. Okay, so this is Kamala with the Southern Belle.
And you all helped us win in 2020, and we're going to do it again in 2024. Yes, we will. So let's get right.
All right, now comes Kamala, the urban woman.
Thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time. Because what we know, you better.
Oh, man. Okay, now we got Kamala. We got Kamala here being black.
Hello to all my divine nine brothers and sisters and my soror. And to all my HBCU brothers and sisters.
All right. So I'm going to do the unexpected here. I will defend her. When I'm with my black friends in North Carolina, after a few days, I throw in the little black lingo here or there. You know, when I'm with my Latino friends, because I no longer have a Latino accent, I start talking a little Latino-ish, you know? When I'm in the South, well, that kind of comes naturally after living there for 15 years with y'all, you know? So I will defend her. The problem with her, though, that I won't defend is she's blatantly doing this versus you kind of do it naturally after a while. She's playing up to them. It's like we've all done that, but at a subconscious level. She's purposely doing it to connect. But she's done it so many times at so many events, and in today's social, pre-internet, she could have got away with it. But with today's social media, that's like a non-starter. We're still learning how to campaign in today's new social media world. Gee, what's your complete take on us? And like I said, there's nothing serious about it, but I just found it funny.
No, I mean, so she's half Indian. Where's the Indian accent? That's my question. I mean, it's like, hey, you want a samosa? You want a samosa? No, she's not going to do that because our voting group is like 0.5% of America, right? So what does that say? She's pandering. I get what you're saying. I become more like the group that I'm hanging out with. But the key thing you said is after some time, right?
Yes.
I don't just walk in the room and then all of a sudden – you know, I'm down with the brothers. What up, my mind? And like, I don't do that. I'm just like, hey, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
That's me. Just like, hey.
Well,
after about, you know, 3 days and a few beers and whiskey, then I'm like, you know, I'm a little more like them. But she's not doing that. She's going from her little circle to the city, and then she's Southern Belle, and then she goes to that city, and now she's urban. And then she does – so you didn't play the Univision one where she was saying COVID?
Yeah, you're right.
Really?
Damn it, and I had that one last week, but I didn't save the URL, so I had to dig him back out. You know, just real quick on that, Obama did that too. They had him on film once, and there were white people and black people. He was properly shaking the white people's hands, and when the black person grabbed him, hug him, yeah, bro, you know, and it wasn't nothing malicious. It was the interaction. But Kamala was pandering, where I kind of thought Obama was pandering too, you know. Obama's upbringing was white middle class, you know. So Kamala was completely pandering. So what are your thoughts on these four candidates we have running for president for the Democrat Party?
Just, it's boring, but it's just totally disingenuous. That's really just my only thought. I know she's maybe that some attempt to be relatable, but I just find it to be totally disingenuous. And actually, I think that it's a turnoff to a lot of people. I do. I think that it is, because it feels fake. It feels phony. And I think people sense that. And I think that at times it's even truly bizarre.
No argument here. All right. Let's keep it moving here.
I should play that YouTube, or do you want to play it?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Can you play it, or do you want me to play it?
The Jamaican?
Did you send it? Okay. Oh, the accent switch. Okay.
Yeah, you got to play it. Okay, it totally fits.
Okay. It's on these darn commercials. Skip. There we go. Nope, I don't want to try YouTube TV for free. Okay, give me 1 second, people. Make it bigger. There we go. All right. Oops, wrong one. What the hell? Where'd it go? Here we go.
Can't hear it.
Oh, you can't hear it?
No. Did you hit the audio thing?
What?
I apologize. Let me do this. Let me put it over here. Oh, son of a gun. Let me get your link. And then give me just patience. We're going to end with this segment here. We'll do the rest later, because Big John says our stream's going to officially end on some of the platforms. But let me just grab this link here, G. I wonder if it's a YouTube issue, you know, but I'm pretty sure.
I want to see it now. Is it funny? It looks funny.
We will
it's
find
hilarious. It. I can try to play it.
Yeah, I got it up here.
Here, let me try. I'll just try right real quick.
All right, go ahead.
The button. Is that working?
I hear it.
Okay.
Can you hear it? Could you hear it in that?
I can.
Okay, good.
Oh, hello, young lady. Quite a marvelous day, isn't it?
Why does she talk so weird?
Let me play with her.
Well, hey there, little nugget. I'm going to be the first black female president of the United States of America.
Man, this doll sucks.
Accent switch Kamala. Any accent you like, as long as it grants her credibility.
A bonjour, you have a croissant. Guten Tag, Sie lieben ein Bratwurst, ufta, 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 da.
Luke, I am your mother.
But wait, there's more. All new Accent Switch Kamala comes with 2 bags of campaign money, a blind eye for illegal immigration, and her own multi-laugh 3000 generator. Laugh in every way possible. Let Accent Switch Kamala turn your life into a complete circus.
When you give me more money, like Uncle Joey did.
Don't you wear a little mask? The money's coming.
I don't understand.
Oh, excuse me, honey.
I meant to say, the money is coming. I love ice cream, Kamala Map.
It's Accent Switch Kamala and brand new Tampon Tim.
You know, my grandma always used to say,
Kamala Janu, please wash your hands so we can eat our chicken masama.
That was good.
That's cute. That was good. Cute. That was cute.
Good.
So next week we'll cover the Brett Baier. We're gonna probably be a few days later than I'd like to be, but that was a pretty important showing because it exposed how she can't handle an interview. And that's on her handlers, because Vance and Trump is crass. He doesn't get it all right, but he can handle a room in the sense of not being ticked off, not losing his control anymore. And Vance is just a natural whiz. But we saw Kamala in that Brett Baier interview lose it. And we're going to break it down next week with various show clips.
But I want to say something about William. She said it weeks ago. The handlers, you said you blame it on the handlers. She said it weeks ago. They're not helping her that much. Didn't you say that, G?
Yes, you did.
They're letting her hang out to dry.
Yep. Right. Well, in defense of her handlers, that's a Democrat style because they have the whole party helping them. But when she's in this situation, she should never – I guess what I'm trying to say is she should never have agreed to the interview, because at the end of the day, it exposed her because she has no clue. She should have done what Biden did, just ducked it. So any final words, G, on today's episode or Kamala's actions as a fellow – well, she's no longer Indian, so she's black, so we don't care.
Well, for the brief time she was Indian, it was great. But I think the Brett Baier thing is going to be important to talk about, because I think that was the death knell of her campaign. I think that was a very bad showing. And I will tell you, the advice that she got to not go to the Al Smith dinner, that was really, really bad advice. A lot of Catholics are upset at her. Even the guy who spoke before Donald Trump, he was a big Donald. He had a lot of TDS, right? Trump drank.
Oh, yeah. You mean Jim Gaffigan?
Yeah.
Yes.
But he hammered her hard, saying it was through Jess, but you had time for Howard Stern and Call Me Daddy. Call her daddy. Call her daddy.
Yeah.
Never heard of that show before. But you don't have time for this? I mean, that's devastating. So I can't wait for that show. We should probably do it early in the week if we have time.
I was going to say, maybe we'll podcast it, meaning we'll just tape it and then we'll release it. That way we don't have to coordinate a brand new live stream over the next couple of days. So we'll talk about that off camera. Miss Annette, you were your whole body language and your whole facial structures, it was like a brand new world. And us, what us POFO, I don't mean that literally, I'm just joking. But, you know, the education and the disparity in how we see it. What are your thoughts in today's episode before we go?
I would just say thank you, because I feel like I learned a lot, and that's good. I love, you know.
That's
I'm
all
still,
I ever want to do, teach.
No, I'm still open. I know I don't know everything. I know I just have, you know, limited experience, but I liked hearing your point of view, and I love both the ladies we had on the show tonight. They were really both very interesting.
Yes, Rosie dropped out. I'm like, oh, what happened? And she had sent us a private note, but I didn't see it, that she had to go. And I feel bad because I wanted her to, you know, tell her the race she's running and how people could contact her. But I'll get that information and I'll make sure it gets in the note. So to everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. Do not forget to like, share, and subscribe. We need those subscriptions, people. And you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms such as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. I am William Del Pilar for G and Annette. And until next time, this is Fired Up, and I bid you adieu.